Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love him.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Yeah. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy, just my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man.
I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to get nobody a second chance.
Trump. To represent that as some sort of subterfuge like John Canzano, I would have expected far better.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate him.
Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald faith truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
Well, he can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 102.9 and 750, The Game.
Hello, everybody. It's Craig Birnbach from KETU. I'm the sports director. Hefe, you gave me a promotion. You gave me news director job.
I'm sorry. I was hustling at the end. I hope it shows through in your paycheck.
Okay, there you go. Hefe's giving me a raise. I appreciate it. Unfortunately, he has no power. I am the sports director. Basically means I'm the sports anchor on Channel 2. You can catch me at 6:30 and 11 o'clock. Filling in for the bald one, John Canzano, who's still in Kansas City. Not coming back yet. That's because the Ducks beat Michigan yesterday in a nail-biter, a breath-stealer, a heck of an Elite Eight basketball game where we saw big shots and even bigger defensive plays by Jordan Bell to lead the Ducks to their second straight Elite Eight. Yeah, Canzano doesn't trust me enough to do 2 days in a row without him. So he's coming on as a guest in his own show, which is, it's pretty awesome. You know, Dad's like, okay, you can have one day, but I am sending the neighbors over the second day to make sure everything's okay. I haven't burned the place down yet. Yesterday we had some fun. I kind of fanned out on everyone, admitted that as a Rhode Island guy, it was hard for me to root for the Ducks, if not impossible. But I did find myself late in the game, especially because of Jordan Bell. I love Jordan Bell. I said that yesterday. One of my favorite guys that I've covered in college. And what a performance from Jordan Bell. I mean, this guy, 6'9", he's undersized for a big, yet he played huge yesterday. And it wasn't, you know, he didn't step up and hit a three. He stepped up and got an offensive rebound on a missed layup by Dylan Brooks, a missed foul shot by Dylan Ennis. There he was, putting on the hard hat. The guys from California, they get the reputation, right? The West Coast guy. It's all about the glamour. And, you know, not hard-nosed. They want to hit the big threes and make the dunks. No, this guy put the hard hat on, went to work, and he built the house. And he got the Ducks to the next round. Love seeing it. Also had a huge block down the stretch. And this is what I love. I love when the guys that usually do the little things and the dirty work get recognized. And that's why I thought it was great to hear I was talking about Jordan Bell. Dylan Brooks talk about Jordan Bell coming through. Dylan Ennis saying, yeah, that I missed that front end of the 1-on-1. Dylan Ennis is 72 years old. He's still in college. He's 107 years old. He's on his third team. He's actually 25, the oldest guy in the tournament. His younger brother plays in the NBA. That's how odd this situation is. On his sixth year, that's the guy you want on the line to make the foul shots in the 1-on-1. He missed it, and there's his guy, Jordan Bell, coming through, getting the board and the bucket at that point. They were down three. They don't score there. Arizona. Gosh, speaking of Arizona, they're hurting today. But Michigan goes down, makes a bucket. They're up five. That game's probably over. But Jordan Bell sneaks in, gets the offensive rebound on the foul shot. One of the toughest things to do. Puts it right back up and in, and suddenly the Ducks have the momentum. And now we're talking about them taking on Kansas in a heck of a tough game. They get out to play in Kansas City, and despite the fact that Kansas City should be in Kansas, it's not, but it's really close. 40 miles away from Kansas, the Jayhawk Nation will be there. It's a home game, and the Ducks, yeah, they're up against it here. And I've heard a lot of Duck fans say, if you make it to the Elite Eight again, it's a successful season and everything else is gravy. I agree it's a successful season. Every time I say successful, I almost say just sex. As you've noticed that, right? I got Gliss two windows away. I saw his head go back. I'm like, what's he laughing at? It's like, I can't say the word successful. Like, look at that. I can't say the word successful. I don't know. Maybe it's a mental thing that I don't think I'm ever going to be good at anything. So I, you know, it's one of those things that my mom always did tell me I was going to be great. I didn't have one of those upbringings. Can't blame it on that. But I'm just saying, everyone says, like, they settle. They say, hey, what, Elite Eight, you can't be upset. I say you got to be greedy as a sports fan. You've got to be greedy. You don't know when this is going to happen again. And if you don't finish the deal, you might end up as a fan regretting the fact that you're okay with it. You know, we've all been there. I was a Knicks fan, you know, still am. But in the 90s, we were so close. I was like, it's okay. There's always next year. And now for 20 years, there's been just nothing good. Blazer fans, you know how close you were to winning a title. And you just thought, okay, we're still going to be good. More recent history, Ducks football, right? Gliss, we were talking about it. Ducks fans thought they're going to be there every year, right?
They got spoiled.
And heck, the first time you go against Auburn, you lose. You're like, hey, first time at the big dance. We'll be back. Everything's always going to be great.
And then they got back and lost again. And then, you know, it's only a matter of time before other teams come up.
And boom, you just don't know what's going to happen. Boom, now you got a fired coach and you're rebuilding. You don't think you're going to win a title next year. It's why Washington Husky fans were like, hey, first time with our coach, you know, he's going to get us there. No, you don't know. You don't know. You've got to finish the deal so you can celebrate because you might not get another chance. It's funny because I was bringing up certain things, talking to Jeff before the show about this topic, and I was saying that, like, look at Syracuse. Boeheim's one of the greatest coaches in college basketball history. His teams win 20 games. They go to the tournament. He's been in the Final Four 6 times. He won one title. Carmelo Anthony, the guy who everyone says is not a winner, won the national title as a freshman. And that's it for Jim Boeheim. One, Georgetown, dominant team when I was growing up with Patrick Ewing. They went to, I think, 3 straight Final Fours. They've been to 5 total Final Fours. They have one title. And I was talking about that, and boom, Jeff drops what I totally forgot about. Jeff, you dropped the football reference.
In honor of my father, who's a big Dolphins fan, Dan Marino, rookie season, goes to the Super Bowl, loses, and everybody says, oh, he's so good, he'll get back. Maybe the best quarterback of all time. Never got back.
And that's in the pro game.
Yeah.
Where you can be there for 18 years and it doesn't turn over every 4 years or some in college basketball every 1 or 2 years. You don't know. So get greedy. Beat Kansas. Hope to beat Kansas. Don't be satisfied. Know that this is it. Like we have to win because we might not get back. You just don't know because programs, things, they can fold in a flash. So sometimes when it escalates and you're good quickly, Don't be like, it's okay, I'm happy, you know, it was a good meal, I enjoyed it, it wasn't perfect, the dessert kind of sucked, but the food was good. No! You need the perfect dessert, because you don't know if you're ever going to have the money to get back to this fancy restaurant. I was talking, you know, poor Gliss, I say poor Gliss now because he's a 49ers fan, and they're awful, but let's not forget, 2011, 2012, you're on top of the world. You have Harbaugh, just got there, you know, just been there a couple of years, turned us from, you know, all of a sudden, we were crap, and now we're awesome. You got Kaepernick. He was, what, 24 years old? You're in the NFC Championship game. Then you're in the Super Bowl, and now you suck. Right?
It's true. They suck.
You thought you'd be back, right? You weren't.
I mean, they went to, I think, 3 straight NFC championships, as you said. I mean, Colin Kaepernick that year, he was not the starter at the beginning of the year. He came out of nowhere. And it looked like the perfect mix for success going forward, and it went downhill from there.
You're on your third coach. I mean, it's, you know, it's crazy how quickly it can turn, so you have to appreciate the times. So enjoy the success. I'm not saying you have to be upset. I'm just saying you have to be greedy. This is the time when, as a sports fan, you have to be greedy because you don't know if you're going to get that meal again. I want to return to Jordan Bell. This is how good Jordan Bell has been. In the tournament, he has now 4 straight games of 12 plus rebounds for the Ducks. There's this list that was put out yesterday of the only other guys to do that: Larry Johnson, Shaquille O'Neal, Antonio McDice, Tim Duncan, Emeka Okafor, Blake Griffin, Mark Mattson. I say Mark Mattson real fast because Mark Mattson's the only guy in that list other than Jordan Bell that wasn't the first or second overall pick in the NBA draft.
You don't have any love for Mark Madsen? He's one of my favorite college basketball players ever. I loved that guy.
All right. You know how I feel about Rhode Island, right?
That's right. Was the little dance he did, that was against you guys, the Lamar Odom teams?
Well, first of all, the dance was in the NBA. The NBA when he won the championship, the Lakers. But when Mark Madsen got a dunk and got Stanford into the Final Four, it was against a Rhode Island team that just choked. Choked worse than they did against
the
Ducks.
That's the one I was thinking of. He had the dunk and he raised his hands.
Yeah. Thank you. So it all comes down to me and somehow to Rhode Island. So no, I don't have love for Mark Madsen. I that hate will never die. Lamar Odom wasn't on that team. He was on the bench, actually, because he was actually cleared academically, but there was so much, maybe we shouldn't let him play yet. UNLV wouldn't clear him. So Rhode Island was like, let's let him sit a year. So Odin played the next year when we went to the Sweet 16. But I really was frowning on the fact that Mark Madsen was not the first or second overall pick. I mean, that is nuts. Every guy on that list was the first or second overall pick. Sure, Mecca Okafor didn't turn into a star. Antonio McDyess' knee exploded, and then the Knicks signed him, and that was great. That worked out well. That's not true. Larry Johnson, of course, great NBA career. And then Shaquille O'Neal's a Hall of Famer, and Blake Griffin's doing what he's doing. I'm just saying that's the kind of tournament Jordan Bell is having right now. And he just willed him to a victory. Now the Ducks, not the only ones to advance yesterday. A great moment yesterday. If you love Bill Murray, and who doesn't love Bill Murray, right? If you don't love Bill Murray, you're kind of a bad person, right? He brings joy with his movies and yet can do the serious thing so everyone can like him, right? You love Bill Murray, right?
Absolutely.
Guys?
Universally loved.
And you know what? I met Bill Murray once. This is a true story. I met Bill Murray. I used to be in Charleston, South Carolina. They have a team called the Charleston Riverdogs baseball team. Bill Murray is a partial owner in that team. And he used to come, and every once in a while he'd like coach first base. They let him get third because big decisions can happen at third. But first base coaches, you're just there for the smack on the butt, maybe a little knuckle love when the guy gets to first. You could see the play. You know if you're going to second at that point. And you yell back when they're going to throw over. But the day that I got the job at K2 in Portland, my phone rang as I was interviewing Bill Murray, and I looked down on it, and I'm like, that's the phone call to decide whether or not I'm going to move across the country to beautiful Portland. I have to cut this interview short with Bill Murray because I'm so excited about this phone call. I didn't, because here's what Bill Murray doesn't let you do, cut anything short because you really don't need to ask more than one question. But yeah, and Bill Murray's ridiculously tall. I just tell you that right now.
Really?
Oh, he's really tall. He loved to hoop back in the day. He's a legit 6'3", I think now, probably 6'2", because we all shrink,
right?
Which I'm not looking forward to. But he loves basketball. His son, assistant coach Xavier. So yesterday, Xavier upsets Arizona. Sorry, Pac-12. Arizona proving it doesn't matter who their coach is, they cannot advance in the NCAA tournament to the Final Four or win a championship. There's Bill Murray cheering. And at that moment, an old argument with my wife that comes up pretty much, it's not that old, it's a week old. I was just arguing about Bill Murray movies. I love Bill Murray movies. And I was saying, I love Groundhog Day, right? One of the, just, I think it's an underrated movie, don't you?
Absolutely. I shared it with my son the first time he ever saw it on Groundhog Day. It was a really awesome thing.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And here's the thing with my wife and I love romantic comedies. I'll say it. I'm man enough to say, Notting Hill's on. Even if it's on like TBS or whatever, I'm watching Notting Hill. That's a good movie. I don't care. Don't look at me like that. It's a good movie. I grew up in Jersey. My first instinct is punch people in the face. And I'll say I love romantic comedies.
I've got a list here of romantic comedies. I'm wondering, can we go through this list? Maybe you give us a yes or no?
I'm just glad that you're admitting it, Jeff, that you're man enough to admit you like romantic comedies.
So I need to hear this, because that's what I'm wondering, is where's the threshold? Like, if it's a good movie, or like, does it have to be well-rounded, or if it's just a good love story, then you're good with it?
Here's where the argument is between my wife and I, because she makes fun of me. My wife would never use gender roles to kind of attach to anything. You know, big on that. My wife, I like to say that I'm a feminist because I was raised by a single mom, and she was my mom and my dad. I was raised that you could not, there are certain things I could never call a woman a chick. And you see how I say woman, not girl? Because I could never say girl. No. My mom taught me women are neither infants nor animals, so do not refer to them that way. You know, you just can't do it. So I always felt like, I'm a I'm a cutting edge guy. I'm all, you know, pro woman. Then I married my wife and realized my mom's not feminist enough for my wife. You know, like I got to be careful no matter what. I don't even realize I'm getting in trouble. You know, I think I'm complimenting the gender and somehow that's not right. So she would never say that liking romantic comedies was a girly thing, but she's kind of saying that without using that. She's basically saying I'm soft. Like, I'm wimpy. She's like, you need movies to always wrap up in a perfect bow and everything's great. I'm like, yes, that's what I want from movies because my life doesn't do that all the time. So I want it to be, I want this world where everything's perfect. I want the guy to get the girl. I want the girl to be gorgeous that the ugly guy, you know, bald, short guy who's really funny gets. Yes, I want that. Do you not realize why? Do you not see what you're looking at? And it's kind of, I got lucky. That kind of happened to me there. But she kind of attacks it, saying, you know, you want like the worst movies. And I always say, you bag on romantic comedies because you give it this title that says, if the movie's just good, it's not a romantic comedy. So like Groundhog Day to her is like, oh, that's just a comedy. Unfair, right? And that's what you're saying, Gliss. You're already putting a label on it, saying like, well, if it's really good, then it's not a romantic comedy.
I don't know if I'm putting a label on it. Like, okay, so here's a perfect example from a movie I watched a lot as a kid, and granted, it was partly because it was a sports movie to me. Forget Paris with Billy Crystal. Have you ever seen that movie?
He's a referee, right?
Yeah, he's a referee.
Look at you bringing sports in.
Yeah.
That's why he's a pro.
It's got Kareem. It's got like a whole cast of cameos in there, but it's a really good romantic comedy as well, and it's very funny.
Right, and that I'm just saying, like, Coming to America is one of my favorite movies of all time. I grew up in that thing. I did all the voices. You know what I mean? It was great. So when to me, a perfect movie. It's hysterical, but it's a romantic comedy, but no one gives it that credit. The whole goal of the movie is to get a wife. How's that not a romantic comedy, right? But people, oh, no, that's a comedy because Eddie Murphy's in it. I'm like, see? But then give me a bad one, Jeff. I know you got a bad romantic comedy on your list that you like.
Not one that I like. I've got a list here.
Okay.
Love Actually. I've never seen it, so I might like it. But
that's
Love Actually.
It is.
Is that a good movie? I've never seen it.
But my wife makes fun of it. She's like, that is the worst. That's an awful movie.
It's a very controversial movie,
yes!
I would say. It is. Very controversial. If it's like some people have a problem if you like it. It's definitely a Christmas movie. We watch it every year during Christmas time. But it is a fantastic movie, and there's all kinds of love stories in it.
Right. And I'll admit it. I like it. I don't care. All right, what else you got?
Harry Met Sally.
Right.
That's
great
a good
movie.
One.
Right.
That's
and that is
one.
A romantic comedy. And my wife doesn't like that one either. This is what my wife will say. I don't know if I saw. Oh, no, I did see it. Nah, not that great. And I'm like, it is great. Billy Crystal's hysterical. You know?
Oh, he's good in everything.
Meg Ryan's adorable. We only have one. We only have one. Male or XY? We're XY chromosomes. Is that how
yes,
is it?
Yes, we're XY. Women XX.
So we only have one XX anywhere near us. We have Adriana. And I want to ask Adriana, if a guy likes romantic comedies, be honest. If you walked in and you were thinking about dating a guy, and right there you saw the DVD, Blu-ray, Netflix, whatever, and the number one thing I've just watched was Notting Hill, points or uh-oh?
It's on my list, I got to say.
Oh.
The hesitation says it all. I'm in trouble.
No, I mean, it just kind of depends. You have to get to know someone, and if they're all mush, then that's a problem. But it's not bad to have a sensitive side.
All right, I'll take it. I'm not even that sensitive. It's not like I just think it's funny, and Hugh Grant is always hysterical.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just think it's an unfair thing. But we're going to bring in an expert.
Okay.
I'm lucky to have a good friend, Ben Mankiewicz. He's the host of Turner Classic Movies. There's two things Ben knows more about than anyone else, and that's movies and UCLA basketball. I've known Ben for about 20 years when we worked together in Charleston. He's the one introduced to me, Kelly O'Coin. We had you on yesterday, the great actor in the show Billions that everyone loves and The Americans. Ben is the expert, and he's also made fun of me more than anyone maybe in the state of Oregon, because we've known each other for a long time, and basically he thinks much of what I think is ridiculous and wrong. So we'll see if he has my back on this one. Plus, we'll talk to him about UCLA basketball. They, of course, play tonight, a Pac-12 team looking to get to the Final Four with a coach, Steve Alford, that is being rumored to maybe want to go back home to Indiana. We'll see if he thinks that's good for UCLA and good for Steve Alford. Hey, you're listening to the Bald-Faced Truth with guest host Craig Bernbrecht from KATU. Keep listening to 750 and 102.9 The Game.
You know, when I'm not in Portland, I still listen to John Canzano on 750 The Game. And I'm serious.
Good afternoon, Portland. Craig Birnbach here, filling in for John Canzano on the Bald Face. True John in Kansas City. We get set for the Ducks in there. A big matchup with Kansas. It's going to be tough. That game is tomorrow. More Elite Eight games tonight, including UCLA playing. And we've been talking movies. We've been talking romantic comedies. I'm trying to convince everybody. Plenty manly to like romantic comedies. Adriana, our one female here, gave me the sort of kind of endorsement. Didn't make me feel great about myself. But there's two things that Ben Mankiewicz knows. My good friend, Ben Mankiewicz. He's the host of Turner Classic Movies. Ben knows two things. Everything else, he's pretty much an idiot. But he knows movies. And he knows UCLA basketball. Now, he is the host of Turner Classic Movies, meaning he's supposed to know all about, you know, It's a Wonderful Life, Casablanca, Rear Window. But I know Ben a long time, and I know his favorite movie is Fletch. So you act, Ben, like, you know, you do a great job acting like you know what you're talking about. And that's not true. Ben knows a ton about movies. Ben, we're talking romantic comedies. And we're talking my likes, and usually we do not agree on much, because you, I think you, about 20 years ago, you said, when I was in my 20s, you said I was a 16-year-old. Does that mean now I'm in my 30s, mentality-wise, yet?
No, it means you're 16 now. Yeah, you've settled into being 16, and you continue to be 16. I notion that I know movies and only UCLA basketball is comical.
It's comical.
But if it makes you feel better to think that you know more about sports than I do, that's fine. It's good. It's your job, so I understand why you'd say that.
That's almost no. That's not a compliment for me in any way. Ben's been like an older brother to me. You like how I said older brother. Make sure people know that. Ben knows a lot about sports, not as much as he thinks, but he does know UCLA basketball. But let's talk movies. My question is, Ben, what makes a great romantic comedy, and what's the difference between a romantic comedy and just a comedy?
Well, obviously, I mean, I don't think it's complicated. I don't know what the, you know, I don't know what the official Hollywood definition is, but a romantic comedy is a comedy. Has to, you know, the problem with the way people make fun of romantic comedies and use this incredibly derisive term and hacky term of like a, you know, a chick flick.
Amen.
Right. It's a silly term and should be, and we should do away with it. But it has to be a comedy, so it has to be funny. And obviously, movies about couples and relationships are funny because relationships, while also incredibly stressful and can be tragic and awful and tear your guts out, are also at their best funny. And so the notion that someone doesn't like romantic comedies, it just means that person doesn't like movies, because some of the best movies ever made, or the best movies certainly of the era that I presume you want to talk about, are romantic comedies. Some of the funniest movies about romantic are romantic comedies. I mean, you know, I was just looking recently for stuff, and like, you know, I think Amy Schumer is brilliant at times, and I thought Trainwreck was really funny. Trainwreck is a romantic comedy.
True.
I got news for you, and it's funny. And you know, you look at Judd Apatow, 40-Year-Old Virgin, is hilarious. It's a romantic comedy. You know, some romantic comedies are schmaltzier than others, right? Knocked Up is a romantic comedy. It's the most romantic comedy of romantic comedies there is, but it's really funny.
So basically, it's kind of like if a romantic comedy is good, people give it a different label, which is unfair.
That's right. That's right. Now, what they mean when they say, when people who don't like romantic comedies, when they say they don't like them, either they're not being honest, or what they mean is they don't like schmaltzy romantic comedies. They don't like romantic comedies that are heavy on the romance and light on the comedy. I don't like comedies that are light on the comedy either.
Right.
I don't, you know, I mean, I guarantee, you know, a man who says he doesn't like romantic comedies, again, it means he doesn't like funny movies. That's what he's saying. And I don't think that's what he means.
I'm going to use that. If you say you don't like romantic comedies, you just don't like movies. Because
there's a guy not supposed to like Pretty Woman, right? Of course you're supposed to like Pretty Woman. It's great.
Right.
When Harry Met Sally. That's a great movie, right? That's
right.
A romantic comedy.
Say Anything, great movie. Romantic comedy, right?
Great. Definitely, maybe. I mean, again, we're being a little careless with the word great. But many of these movies are very good and a lot of fun and are worth watching. I got Fletch. I mean, he ends up with her in the end.
He does.
It's a romantic comedy. I got it. I mean, it is. There are components of a romantic comedy in Fletch. But, I mean, you know.
Bull Durham's a romantic comedy, right? That's fair. Bull Durham, great sports.
Bull Durham's unquestionably a romantic comedy, and it's, you know, and it's outright hilarious and an incredibly memorable memorable movie. I mean, Notting Hill, which, you know.
I love Notting Hill.
Friends, you know, I mean, like all my friends who like movies like Notting Hill, because it's great. It's great.
Yeah,
it's great. And part of the reason it's great is the romance part. They just do it funny.
Yeah,
right?
it's like you're afraid, like you said, men are afraid to admit that they like romantic comedies. I'm not, you're not, because, you know, we're comfortable enough in our masculinity to admit that that label doesn't scare us. I mean, Bull Durham is on most people's list of best sports movies. So guys will say that. You throw in that it's a romantic comedy, they'll back away. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you know what else is a romantic comedy? Major League.
It's true. Didn't think about it. And I will say that's a great movie. And I know you'll say I throw around great, but you know I only have two things.
Yeah,
it's either it's the worst thing in the world or it's the best thing in the world.
Because I'm
16.
And now I'm starting to think I've misdiagnosed you at 16. That's more 13.
It's probably true. My wife says I'm too, you know, everything's black or white. And I'm like, yes, that's true. And that's how you mock this, but it's a better way to live your life, to just, you know, good, bad. It's that gray area is where you get in trouble, man.
Yeah, gray area is where life is interesting, and it's why it's very frustrating to have an argument with you, because I didn't realize that it was either, that our two choices were either jumping off the cliff to a fiery death or living in eternal bliss. Like, there's probably something in between it.
I don't believe in the between. I mean, I might end up there, but my whole thing is, it's either great or it's terrible. And that's why Ben and I have had so many arguments, not just on movies, life, and sports all the time.
Well, but you know, that's you know who you remind me of when you say it?
Oh, no, this is scary.
It's very simple. It's a very Trumpian view of the world, and I know.
That's the meanest thing you've ever said to me, Ben. That's not even cool. I want to get to the thing that you kind of live for. Ben loves the Oakland A's, but that doesn't bring him a lot of joy. Much more pain, you know, I would say.
That's part of being a sports fan, though.
Yep.
Right? And if you just expect joy, you don't get what being a sports fan is. My let me just tell you quickly. My one of my best friends is a television reporter in Phoenix named Teresa Strasser, and she's got a 7-year-old boy now, and he's become a really big sports fan. He's a Warriors fan because Teresa grew up in San Francisco. She's been a Warriors fan all her life, no bandwagon, and he became a Warrior fan. And when they blew that 3-1 lead, she emailed me that night, and she was like, "He's disconsolate. He's throwing stuff. He's pouting. He doesn't want to talk. He's burying his head in his pillow. He's sobbing." And I like want to know, how serious is this? And I was like, "Oh, this is great. This is one of the great nights of his life."
Right. This is life forever.
This is it. He'll never forget it. And it's not interesting if they win all the time. He needs this. This is how you grow. I guess, you know, I was a Washington football fan before I realized how horrible the name was, and before their owner became the most loathsome person in sports, now that Donald Sterling sold the Clippers. But I remember them blowing a 34-21 lead to the Dallas Cowboys when they had the ball with 6 minutes to play and the NFC East on the line in the last game of the season. The loser didn't even make the playoffs. And they were up 34-21 with the ball, 6 minutes to play. They lost 35-34. I remember every play of that last 6 minutes. They've won 3 Super Bowls. I'm like, yeah, those nights, I guess, were fun. I don't really remember them. But I remember that loss to the Cowboys, and I was 12.
And this is what's funny that you say that, because I was explaining to Gliss, our producer, how we're great friends. But the fact that you have certain quirks, and one of those quirks is you can't remember where your keys are when you put them in your pocket. So you remember every play there. But there was a time Ben and I worked together in Charleston. I was his photographer. I was his camera guy. He was the reporter. I handed him a tape, and a beta tape, huge tape. We get back to the truck, doesn't know where it is. You left it on top of the urinal. You remember? You probably don't remember that. Do you remember that?
No, but I mean, there's no part of the story that isn't believable.
Right.
I take notes in reporters' notebooks. There's probably 50 of them strewn over the Charleston community. I just write a note, crucial notes for my story, and then I get back, and that's the end of that note.
But you remember every play in the Washington football game. But UCLA is your love, right? Would you say that's your dad passed that on to you? Tonight,
I'd say my favorite sports team is the Oakland A's, followed closely by UCLA Bruins basketball.
team tonight got a chance to get to the Final Four. The early underdog. Will they win? First of all, will they win? I know the answer is that they can win because when they're playing well. But do you trust this team?
I don't really trust the coach. We saw coaching last night at the end of the Xavier Arizona game, and again, it doesn't mean Sean Miller's not a good coach, but he did not have a good 2 minutes. And that team acted like they weren't prepared for that situation. Ultimately, the players got to play. And ultimately, in basketball, we overcomplicate it. You hit a bunch of three-pointers, everybody looks like a genius. Xavier misses one of those three-pointers when they're down seven, and then Arizona's in the final eight. But I would rather have John Calipari in an evenly matched game than Steve Alford. But I think what I've seen this year, UCLA, at its best, can't lose. They don't always play their best, but when they're at their best, they can't be beaten. That offense is just too good, and it will wear anybody down. It wore Kentucky down in December at Rupp. So that said, I'd take Kentucky because of the coaching. And I'm pretty sure that nothing UCLA does is going to surprise Calipari and Kentucky the second time around.
You have Lonzo Ball. You see him a lot. You watch pretty much every game. I'm a Knicks fan. How badly do I want the Knicks to be able to get that guy?
You know, I am unlike you. I am hesitant to delve deeply into hyperbole, but I think he's the best college player I've seen since Michael Jordan. Now, it doesn't mean he'll, and remember LeBron James, of course, didn't play college, but I think that gives him the chance, and by chance, a reasonable chance, to be a top 25, certainly top 50 NBA player, that he has the potential to be transformative. I think that's why UCLA is great this year, not really because of Alford, who I hope takes the Indiana job along with every other UCLA fan. But I don't hate Alford. I've grown to be like, okay, fine. But that team is balls. And even when he doesn't get the assist or score, he makes that offense go. And I think in the NBA, with better players around him, with guys who will respond to his court sense and savvy, he reminds me of Magic Johnson. In so many ways, he just knows where everybody else is, and he can score when necessary. And when he decided halfway through the season that UCLA was a terrible defensive team, he became the best defensive player on the team. So I think that if somebody takes Markelle Fultz from Washington first and passes on Ball, then Fultz might be a great, great player. I think anybody who passes on Ball will regret it, because I think he has the potential, really good potential, to be a transformative NBA player.
You mentioned it just, quickly, maybe a little hyperbole after you mocked me for my hyperbole. Do you really feel that that is that most UCLA fans are totally fine if Steve Alford returns to Indiana as their head coach?
No, nobody thinks. I mean, that's what's forgotten and all. Nobody thinks that they handled the first search well. I mean, the athletic director, Dan Guerrero, wouldn't wait for Greg Marshall while Wichita State was making his Final Four run, because I think he panicked and thought, if Alford signs that extension that he'd already agreed to verbally with New Mexico, then we can't get him, right? But since he hadn't signed it, we could get him. And he'd already been turned down by, I can't even remember who now, right? But they'd always go for the biggest names. But if Greg Marshall's going to leave, UCLA now doesn't seem like a dangerous place the way it did 4 years ago when Ben Howland couldn't recruit California and players were quitting in alarming numbers, 9-10 guys in 4 years quitting the team because they don't want to play for Howell. And now it's sort of appealing. And you're UCLA. All you have to do is hire a good recruiting director and not screw things up. You're in Southern California. Reasonable UCLA fans expect one thing. We don't expect championships. We expect a top 15 program 9 out of every 10 years. That's what North Carolina has. It's what Duke has. It's what Kentucky has. That's what the level that we're asking for. You don't have to win. That's what Kansas has. There's no reason for Kansas to be this much better than UCLA over the last 20 years.
As a longtime UCLA.
And I would love another coach to have that opportunity. Errol Watson, the coach in the NBA, former UCLA player, might be interested. I don't know whether he's a good game coach, but players like him, they respond to him. He loves UCLA. You hire a great recruiting director, and we'll see how he is in a game. But he's an NBA coach, so, he knows something. And he played 15 years as a backup point guard. And, backup point guards, they're like catchers in Major League Baseball. They make good coaches.
Not always, but usually they need to know what everybody's doing on the court, just like the catcher needs to know what everyone's doing. So it certainly gives them a leg up on and most positions. Unfortunately for Patrick Ewing, you don't see a lot of centers getting jobs in the NBA, which you know, as a Patrick Ewing fan, I would hope someday would happen. I want to get back to the day job, the one that pays the bills, the movie job, Turner Classic Movies. Yeah. You have gotten to meet so many amazing people, interview amazing people. I know outwardly you're not like me. You don't get super excited. You remain calm. But has there been one person that you've gotten to sit down and interview that you had to hold that inner Craig in to not get too excited?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, I mean, a little thing. I goofed up meeting a couple people, not so much related to my job, but believe it or not, and you'll understand this, I goofed up meeting Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine, who was touring with Bruce Springsteen. And I wanted to tell him how great their version of The Ghost of Tom Joad was, but I said, I love your version of Atlantic City. And he was polite, but I just panicked. I mean, I knew I was panicking.
Not a big guitar in that one.
No, right. I was like, and then afterwards, I was like, did I get something wrong? It's Carrie, you got to be careful meeting your heroes. There were certain people, Max von Sydow intimidated me just because he plays intimidating people and he looks intimidating. He was incredibly decent and kind. I was very scared and nervous about interviewing and meeting Sophia Loren because it's like meeting royalty. And it's just there, she gives off an aura. You know, when she came into the room comes alive. But she was lovely. I was scared about Jerry Lewis because I know how tough he can be, but he was also lovely. I just walked into somebody. I just this weekend at the San Luis Obispo Film Festival had a really great hour-long interview with Josh Brolin, who turns out is hilarious. And I don't know whether you know this, but he's very handsome, Craig.
I've heard that from others. I'm comfortable enough to say I like romantic comedies. I'm not comfortable enough to say that I think Josh Brolin's a handsome man, but I'll take your word for it.
His hair is magical. I got to be honest, magical hair.
Hair's overrated, Ben.
So it happens a lot. You know, Ernest Borgnine, I interviewed up in Portland. Mm-hmm. You were there. You went to a meal with us. He's just so kind and wonderful and decent. Eva Marie Saint, Tippi Hedren, Norman Lloyd is 102 years old, was in Hitchcock's Saboteur. And he's a friend, Norman is, at 102. And, you know, and it's nice. This job has given me this opportunity to meet some really cool people, and many of them are great. And a few of them aren't, but most of them are great.
I'd love to know the ones that aren't, but I know you're too classy to do that. Where will you watch UCLA? Do you have to be by yourself? And I want to tell you this, Kendra, Ben knows my lovely wife, secretly videotaped me watching the Rams play the Ducks the other day and giving the pep talk to the dogs, telling them to play defense and to, I think, steal the soul out of the Oregon Ducks. And you've witnessed that many times. You also can, you can't be as loud as me, but you're an intense guy when watching the game. Do you have to be by yourself tonight?
Yeah, almost every big Oakland A's playoff game, and as we know, if it was a big Oakland A's playoff game, they lost it. I can't watch on TV. I have to go listen on the radio by myself. Like I can't do it. I just get too nervous, and somehow being in the car or driving, listening on the radio calms me a little. So I totally understand. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. UCLA basketball was such a thing I shared with my dad. So I actually get a little bit emotional during these games because I want to talk to him about it because I know he'd care so much. The season's already been satisfying, and so losing to Kentucky, could be terrible in a Sweet 16 game. There's no shame in it, right? Like, what I hope is that we don't lose, 98-64. Like, but if we hang in there and then lose, I'll be upset, but I'll get over it pretty quickly. It was a good year, and then the next morning, Steve Alford can go take the Indiana job, and we can be done with this guy.
It's funny, because I just got done saying what you just said was ridiculous. That's why we're awesome. I just said you got to get greedy as a sports fan, because you never know if you're going to be back. Like, everyone thinks, oh, it's okay and satisfied, like the Ducks, they've been to the Elite Eight twice. I'm like, hey, you could end up being like Georgetown with one national title, Syracuse, one national title. Like, you get one shot. The 49ers were on the, you thought they were going to go win multiple titles with Harbaugh and Kaepernick, and now they suck. And then you just said you'd be satisfied. You're wrong. You can't be satisfied. You got to go for it. Get greedy, Ben.
No, I am greedy, but there's a realism to now where UCLA is that we're looking at Kentucky, North Carolina, Kansas, just to get to the final. And And that would be great, and it would be terrific, because then we could say, hey, man, no one has earned this more than UCLA, right? This is, they have, you know, Cincinnati, Kentucky, North Carolina, Kansas. You didn't get any cupcakes, as they have in previous years, getting to the Sweet 16. So I'll be nervous. I'll watch it. I have to be careful. I have a four-year-old daughter, or she's turning four tomorrow, and we'll be you know, and I have to, as often she watches, and then I say something hideous that no one should say around a four-year-old. And I say, it's just this grown-up stuff. It's grown-up basketball stuff. It's in fact, it's embarrassing, and I shouldn't say that. But wait 2 minutes, and I'll say it again.
But once again, Ben, proving that you're a grown-up, and I am not. Thanks so much for coming on, Ben. I know you got to get on a flight. Good luck to UCLA today. I always wish you joy. And you're not playing Rhode Island, so I'm okay rooting for UCLA tonight. Ben Mankiewicz, everybody, from Turner Classic Movies, as I mentioned, knows more about movies and UCLA basketball than anyone on the planet. Hey, I'm Craig Birnbach, filling in for John Canzano on the Bald-Faced Truth. Hey, we've got John coming up at 1:30 from Kansas City to talk Ducks. Hey, you're listening to 750 and 102.9, The Game.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go.
The Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano.
John Canzano is on The Game.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 102.9 and 750, The Game.
Craig Birnbach from K2 Sports filling in for John Canzano on the Bald-Faced Truth. John's going to join us at 1:30 about to talk about the Ducks' next game against Kansas. He's out there covering the game. I'm sitting here, you know, trying to fill the role. I'm playing hurt today, though. I know you think the job of being a television sports anchor isn't dangerous. Yesterday, though, I'm at the Blazers-Knicks game doing my thing right before, you know, the game starts. My sportscast begins around 6:48. In case you want to watch tonight, please do. Pays the bills. And right, they call on TV, it's the pitch. When they, you know, you see the two anchors and there's that double box and they're like, Craig Birnbach's live down at the Moda Center. Craig, take it away. Well, right when they're saying Craig Birnbach's live at the Moda Center, I see my photographer, Brian Warner, a.k.a. the ace, because he's the best at what he does. I see him flinch. I'm like, whoa. And my head, like, you know, things in your head move so fast that the words that you think later when you're explaining it are way slower. In my brain, I'm like, what's he doing? They said stand by. You can't move when you're the camera guy. When they say stand by, that's your job at that point, is to just stand by. And I see him flinch. And my head's like, what's Brian doing? And then, bam, the back of my neck gets drilled by a basketball. And bang. And then I see Brian's face. You know that face when someone's like just hurt themselves? He goes, ugh. And I'm still smiling because I'm on live television. And I just go. I just go. Can't really feel my fingers, but I'm just hoping I'm not going to drop the mic. I've had one major surgery in my life, and it was neck surgery because I had three, you know, nerve, what do they call discs? I had three herniated discs. I played an entire softball season, refused to quit, knowing that my arm was going numb. We lost the championship. I went in Monday. I had surgery Wednesday. That is a true story. The doctor was like, you have nerve damage. I had an MRI. They're like, you're going to lose the use of your arm. Go have surgery. And I did, but I refused to do it during the co-ed softball season.
Look at you. You're like the Iron Man of co-ed softball.
Or, as my wife says, an idiot. I mean, I wouldn't. I'm like, nah, man, I think there's something really wrong. They're going to shut me down. They're going to shut me down. Those were my words. They're going to shut me down from co-ed softball. And it's like Division D. You know what I mean? Like, it's not even like we're not pros. But I'm like, I'm the shortstop, man. I'm the leadoff hitter. Without me, you guys are going nowhere. And I wouldn't do it. I went, and yes, you know, I had a chiropractor tell me I had loose cartilage in my shoulder. Apparently, that wasn't completely true. I had three herniated discs. I had to get them repaired. So something hits my neck. That's like anything else, I'm pretty much fine. No one says anything. I finish my sportscast, and at the end, I'm like, you know, we'll see you at 11. Back to you. And you can't hear so great in the Moda Center. It's loud, and you got that little IFB earpiece. I hear, hey, Craig. And that always means there's going to be a question, and that is live television, there's nothing scarier than a question you're unprepared for. Radio, you could just get out. You got plenty of time. But the television, you just think, for some reason, it feels more important. And when you hear, hey, Craig, you're like, uh-oh.
what's next? Lincoln Graves, who was anchoring then, goes, I didn't notice it, but Val did. Did you get drilled by a basketball right there? Yes, I did. So if you want to see it, if you go to my Twitter page, at C Birnbach, K-A-T-U, it's B-I-R-N-B-A-C-H. I say back. My brother says Bach. Some people say Bach. I don't care enough. As long as you're smiling when you say it. But I retweeted me getting drilled with a basketball right before I went on television and kept going. You're impressed, right? You guys thought I was a soft TV guy. I've known these guys now 24 hours. Now you're like, maybe he's not that soft, right?
I'm impressed. Right. I don't know if comedies. I could carry on if I got hit in the back. The romantic comedies, maybe, you know, you just made proof. Up for that.
That's what I'm saying. That's what it is. It's a little combination. Like, I love Notting Hill, but boom, took a hit, kept on going.
You're the double threat.
That's right. I'm the whole package. My wife should be just so thankful.
You're sensitive and tough.
All right. Hey, I also do a podcast called Birnbach's Always Right. I do it with my good friend Nick Vall. We have a thing that we do called Birnbach's Reacts. It's very similar to what you do on the BFT with three random things. The difference is I don't know what these three random things are. John usually comes up with it. I put a little twist on it. So we're going to do Birnbach's three random things. Enjoy.
Three random things.
All right, so I had Gliss and Jeff, a.k.a. Hefe, coming up with these questions. I have no idea. They're going to throw topics at me, and I have to react. All right, who's up first?
I'm up first. I thought maybe we could tie in what you were talking about earlier on the show with the Final Four. I have a bracket here of the best romantic comedy lead actors.
Oh, boy.
I want you to go through, tell me who wins. This is just going to be the Final Four, so who gets to the finals, and who is the best romantic comedy actor? First matchup. Hugh Grant versus Adam Sandler.
It's not even close. Hugh Grant. I mean, look, here's the thing with Adam Sandler. There was a time I loved Adam Sandler, and now I'm angry at Adam Sandler. If I meet Adam Sandler, we could have an honest conversation, which we can't, of course, because I would be kissing his butt. Let's be honest. If I met him, oh, I think you're great. You know, I love it. Oh, look, I'm a Jewish guy. He's the only person that's ever written a Hanukkah song that anyone knows. I mean, it's the only one. Do you know any others?
I don't, and I actually love the song. I'm Christian, and I love the song.
I mean, I know. I could throw a little dreidel at you, but you don't know.
Oh,
you don't know
yeah.
what that is. Yeah, but it's but as you're a Jewish kid, you got nothing.
No,
you got
Hanukkah
nothing.
Song's
and
better.
Then Adam Sandler comes along, and boom, lands something in the lap of the entire world that they're laughing at. So I love Adam Sandler, but lately his movies have been terrible. You know what I'm saying? So, and Hugh Grant, that man, that clumsy, handsome fella can make me laugh, and at the same time, he makes the women, you know, just swoon.
I kind of saw that one coming based on the amount of times we've heard the words Notting Hill on this show today.
I don't care. I like Notting Hill. I'm man enough, but no. Thank you, Adam Sandler, for writing the Hanukkah song. And thank you for, I know it was supposedly terrible. I didn't see it. It's a cartoon movie. I'm a grown man and I don't have kids yet. So I didn't see it, but he did a Hanukkah movie
Eight
as
crazy
well.
Crazy Nights.
Right.
Very good.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Oh, good. And look, you know, can you name your second favorite Hanukkah movie? Yeah, silence, because there are none. That's all I'm saying. So I do thank you, Adam Sandler, for that, but Hugh Grant wins that one.
Now, I would like to say to Adam Sandler's benefit, he's one that he gets regularly the Razzie for the worst actor. He also usually is the highest paid actor in all of Hollywood. So just throwing that one
Adam's
out there.
Adam's winning. Adam
yeah.
is winning.
Yeah,
he's
not too upset
about this.
Doesn't
need me to compliment him.
Now, this next one, this is the tough one. This is where I think you might have some problems.
Uh-oh.
Billy Crystal versus Tom Hanks.
I knew you were doing it as soon as you said it. Ouch, that is... Oh, that is a tough
one. This should be the 1 and 2 seed. I think, you know, I kind of mismatched these two, but this is...
But someone had to face Hugh Grant in the finals.
Yeah.
Only,
yeah.
you know, Hugh Grant's got to get into the finals. Here's the thing. Billy Crystal, to me, is funnier. You know, Harry Met Sally is probably better than anything that Tom Hanks did that I enjoyed. But... If this is quality over quantity, right?
Yeah.
I mean, where do you go with this?
Do you vote against Tom Hanks in anything? You know, but again, like you said, I agree with you. Billy Crystal is funnier.
I think Billy Crystal maybe has the edge in romantic comedies, I would say. I think he's a little funnier. He fits the role better. Tom Hanks, I think, has more range, but I don't know. It'd be hard to choose against Billy Crystal there.
And this is what I'm going to do. They both had the queen of romantic comedies with them, right, in movies.
Right.
Meg Ryan, right? I mean, Harry Met Sally and everything Tom Hanks did with
yeah.
you know, with
Sleepless in Seattle. Yep. Still Pretty Awake much, in Seattle.
Right. Still, I mean, he did the same I've Got Mail and Sleepless yeah. in Seattle. They're yeah. the same movie, right?
Yeah.
They're the same movie. I don't even know where one begins and one ends. So I'm going to compare it on that. Because Meg Ryan wins Queen of Romantic Comedy. She, you know, it's her and like maybe Sandra Bullock in a war with Julia Roberts, and maybe Julia Roberts in the finals. I'm going to go Billy Crystal because I think Harry Met Sally is the best of the bunch. And you brought up Forget Paris, which I kind of forgot. So, Gliss, I say you and I'm pointing. On the radio, people, you can't see where I'm pointing? I'm pointing at Gliss, who he can't see me either because he's like 7 miles away. I see the glint of his bald head, and I know he's there.
That's right.
I can't see above the monitor. I'm barely 5'6" over here, so yeah. I can barely see.
Little known fact about that, John prefers if we have the lights on in here. So usually the lights are a little higher, but yeah.
And so there's more glint off the bald head? Is that what you're saying?
I think he can see us better if the overhead lights are on. But
it's like a bald head beacon.
I was saying, like, if we could do smoke signals with just shines off our bald heads, Gliss and I could talk forever and never have to actually speak out loud. Yeah. We could just do it with these weird signals.
Bald guys are very popular during the noon to three segment, that's for sure.
They better be popular all the time. That's what I'm saying.
So you're going Billy Crystal?
I'm going Billy Crystal.
Now, I would go Tom Hanks just because the love between him and Wilson in Castaway, I thought that was the best. But sets
that's
us
a good
up.
Point. Good
Billy
point.
Crystal, Hugh Grant for the championship.
He's already mentioned it. You mentioned Notting Hill so many times. Hugh Grant. No, but Hugh Grant, I mean, you named, you know, Ben brought up Three Weddings and a Funeral. Like, we hadn't even mentioned that one.
9 months.
Love Actually. Hugh Grant,
is great.
He's in that one. So, Hugh Grant, to me, he is the king of romantic comedies. All right, Gliss, you're up.
All right, so Clay Matthews Sr. died at the age of 88 today, which I kind of made me think, what is the best sports family in history? And there's a lot of them.
There are a lot of them. I mean, the first one that hits me in the mouth is the Mannings. You know, when I first think about it, to have the worst one be Archie, you know, as far as winning, I think the Mannings are two guys, brothers that won Super Bowls, and one of them is an all-time great, and they both might end up in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, if you're doing power rankings, you'd probably have to start there. I would probably agree with that.
Yeah, the Matthews family, that is impressive. The Curry family, I mean...
The Williams sisters, Barry and Bobby Bonds, the Griffies. There's a lot of them out there if you look them up, but...
The Williams sisters, you know what? If you go off into another realm, like not in that major sports, the Williams sisters is right there with the Mannings. I think that would be two. I mean, the two greatest female tennis players of all time to dominate that way. The Mannings get the edge with the third. You know, Richard Williams coached him, but, you know, not the player. So, I think that you'd have to go that way. I always think, the Griffies are amazing, but one is, you know, one's one of the greatest of all time. The other one's just a really, really good player. I mean, even you look at the Ripkins had Billy Cal Sr., who was a manager. It kind of depends on how you put it all together. But that's a good one. I think, tweet at us, at CBurnback, KATU, or at 102.9/750 The Game. If you got one better, did we miss somebody in there? That's a great question. I feel good about the Mannings with the Williams sisters right there at number two.
Our third and final question. Saints, they're rumored to be looking at Johnny Manziel. Very surprised to hear that. You might have heard Mark Sanchez just signed by the Chicago Bears. Colin Kaepernick still not getting any love. Is this a political thing for Kaepernick, or is this he doesn't give teams the best chance to win?
Well, I was just seeing now, I was thinking we could talk a little Kaepernick because Richard Sherman came out in defense and say it's unfair that Kaepernick has not been signed. Look, I think that you can't talk with one without the other. They're both true. Sometimes you have two truths. Look, he stinks. He kind of stinks, right? I mean, he's been pretty awful. You look at his numbers, they're terrible lately. Are there worse quarterbacks than him? Yeah, but what does that mean? And so you add this to it. There's certainly an element where some owners aren't going to want that. Look, when you're a star, you could say and do anything, and you've got to know that. You know, when you're not a star. Kaepernick, look, it's America. You get to stand for what you believe or sit for what you believe. I totally support that, and I think that people can disagree with him if they want to, but it's his job, and he has to know how that affects. I know right now I've got an open microphone. There are so many things I can say right now that'll get me fired from you guys will never let me back in the building, and I can't go to my other job as soon as I leave here. Like, I know that. So you can't, you know, Kaepernick knows that what he does could affect his career. Whether or not we think it's fair or not doesn't really matter, because the owner of the team, the coach of the team, look, coaches don't like distractions. They just don't. Now, here's who they'll take distractions from. LeBron James, distract away. You know, everyone's talking about the Ball brothers right now, how much distraction the dad will be. Well, we just heard Ben Mankiewicz say that this guy could be as good as, you know, the as good as Michael Jordan. Huge hyperbole. But his dad can say a lot of crap. Other people's dad, Pat Connaughton's dad, can't say a lot of crap right now. You know, the Blazers aren't going to be like, ah, he's worth it. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's both. He's not a very good quarterback. So he's not going to be your starter, right, on a good team. Do you think Kaepernick's a starter, anybody?
No, I don't. I think he's very talented physically. And, you know, we kind of talked about in the 49ers earlier, that year that they did go to the Super Bowl. I mean, in some ways, he was almost like a running back. They had a great defense, and he was very dynamic, but teams caught up to that. So, yeah, I don't think he's necessarily a starting quarterback in the NFL.
And if he is, he's going to have to suddenly change our view of him, right? Now, you could blame Chip Kelly and awful offenses. Do whatever you want. But, I mean, he's not very good, and he's not as healthy. So that athleticism, we don't even know if it's still there. Shoulder surgery, knee surgery, been banged up. He just doesn't look special anymore when he's on the field. So I think that the number one thing that's affecting him is that not everyone, he doesn't have the pool looking for him. There's a lot of, Sanchez is going to be a backup quarterback they hope will never play. If you're going to have a guy that you really don't want to play, do you want distraction? Probably not. But we have to stop, people have to stop ignoring the fact that he's not very good. That's what bothers me about this situation. But the people that say he's just not very good, that's not why he's getting signed. No, he's not getting signed because he's not very good and he's got baggage with him. So why bring baggage with a guy that's not going to give you, you know, you weigh positives and negatives. And for a lot of owners and some coaches, distraction is going to be negative. And his play has to outweigh those negatives. And right now, I think on Kaepernick's career, there is no guarantee that they will. There's a chance that it will.
Just for a devil's advocate here, the Browns, they have Josh McCown. Would you put Kaepernick over McCown on the quarterback?
Well, he's now a Jet, right? Didn't McCown sign with the Jets?
Did he get traded?
Yeah, no, he signed with the Jets. I think McCown's a Jet.
Yes, you're right. Sorry about that.
But same argument. Yeah. Same argument.
The Jets have him, so.
Look, here's the thing. I don't think either one's very good.
Right.
I'm the Jets. I'm terrible. I'm terrible at offense. And I just lost all my good wide receivers. Like, so I'm not going to, my quarterback's not going to come. Colin Kaepernick's not going to save my team. And look, I think the distraction in New York, where I'm from, it'll be the least of the distractions. Because in New York, that stuff's not going to bother as much. But I don't know if he can run the team. You know, I don't think he'll be good. Now, I know that Josh McCown is not very good, but I know he doesn't make a ton of mistakes. He's terrible. Let's be honest. He had one little run where came in for Jay Cutler and didn't suck, and he sucked ever since. He's, what is he, 70 now? What is he, 49? How old is he, McCown? He's old.
He's 37.
Yeah, he's for a quarterback. That's kind of old.
I just had my 40th birthday. I'm taking offense to that.
Right. You're playing quarterback? You're playing quarterback because you don't look good.
One of these days.
Look, I would want neither. My answer to that is I would want neither. But I do think it's an interesting, you know, a question whether or not people still think that Kaepernick's good enough to start. And I don't think a lot of NFL teams do. And I think that's where his problems lie. And also, I think the way that NFL free agency works, we're not close to the season yet. So let's wait till the end to see whether or not Kaepernick doesn't get signed at all. If he doesn't get signed at all, then you get to say, you know what, they're not signing him just because of political reasons. And you get to disagree with that. But you can't ignore the fact that people that have jobs like he does, or even what we have, you know that there's certain things you can say and you can't say. Was that three or was that two? Do we have one more?
That was three.
Look at that. So I could have kept going on that one.
We do have a bonus if you'd like a quick bonus question.
But I want to bring in Chris in the Gorge. Well, I love Chris in the Gorge. He listens to everything, watches everything. He had a good point. We didn't have Kevin Costner in our floor at all.
Wow. I was doing this on the fly.
I know.
And
I know.
Yeah,
that's
he busted me. He busted me on that one.
And that is true.
If you had the extended bracket, he would definitely be in there.
I think
Richard Greer would make it in there.
Kevin James I was going to throw in there, but I thought him and Adam Sandler were kind of one in the
same.
So
yeah. Be quiet, Kevin James. I would say this, though. I think Kevin Costner makes the final.
Really? Now, would he beat Hugh Grant? That's the million-dollar question.
No one beats Hugh Grant, Craig Burbank's mind. Nobody. Hugh Grant is king of the romantic comedy. And I love Kevin Costner because he makes baseball movies. Now, if you were going to say that, you know, the king of the sports movie is Kevin Costner, right? I mean, there's no way.
Absolutely.
I mean, he made football movies, that, you know, as a GM wasn't that good. But, three baseball movies that are fantastic.
I got to throw Stallone in there.
For sports?
Sylvester Stallone.
Look, Rocky.
Yeah, that's really what it's based on, yeah.
You got one thing. He got no other genre.
20 installments of it.
Look, he's brilliant. He's brilliant because here's the thing. Sylvester Stallone from the New Jersey area, by the way. This guy looks like a moron. He looks like an idiot. And he's a genius. He wrote Rocky. He's written many of them. First Blood, Rambo, wrote. So this is a guy that plays the part of the idiot that writes the idiot part. Brilliant, right? Brilliant. Now and every movie that he's done has not been great, but he can find the niche. And in the end, it's a guilty pleasure. Now, Rocky 1, Rocky 2 are just brilliant movies. What I think Sylvester Stallone was able to do is he was take two movies that were just great movies and then turn them into a series that really ends up not being great movies, but just a great experience. Rocky 3 is not a great movie. Rocky 4 is kind of a terrible movie, but if I wasn't chanting USA at the end, I'd be lying to you, right? And then he did Rocky 5, which is awful, and then, oh my God, he brings it back. His last two installments, good movies again.
That last one was the best one, in my opinion, Rocky Balboa. That one. I cried in the theater.
And then Creed, though. You can't forget about Creed.
Creed, yeah.
Also another good movie. One. I mean, it's just amazing that right when you think that's it. He's jumped the shark. The Rocky thing's terrible. Tommy Morrison shouldn't be in a movie. Boom. Sylvester Stallone reinvents himself into the old guy. You know, you got to give credit to the guy. Hey, and you got to give credit to, you know, Gliss. Hefe came up with some great questions. I appreciate it. Shout out to Nick Vol came up with the concept. Hey, we're not done. Hey. John Canzano is going to join the John Canzano Show. How brilliant is that? That's coming up next. You're listening to 102.9 and 750, The Game.
I'm Tim Meadows, and I'm really a ladies' man. You're listening to John Canzano on 750, The Game.
Hey, everybody, it's Craig Burnback, not John Canzano, on the Bald-Faced Truth. You see me on Channel 2 KATU television, but we're kind of flipping the switch on the show. John Canzano left his show in my control, which was probably a mistake on his part. But like a good father, he's calling in to make sure we haven't burned the place down. John's joining us now from Kansas City. And John, I got to tell you, we've been talking romantic comedies. I've been screaming about the University of Rhode Island. I've been having my friends on as guests. I took Kelly O'Coin back. You stole him from me. I had him on yesterday. I'm having guys from Turner Classic Movies, like my only two famous friends on. So there might not be anything left. I know that you're calling in. I know Gliss said, because he wants to talk the Ducks. You just wanted to make sure the show was still here, didn't you?
I'm getting calls from the neighbors saying that you threw a kegger. And so I'm making sure that it's still there. I love it. People are talking about it. I got people here in Kansas City coming up to me going, what did you do? Why is Burnback in that seat? And people are talking about you, Craig. Good, bad, or indifferent. It's good. You're doing a good job.
All right. Well, I can't wait to show you. Kendra, I don't know if you heard, Kendra secretly videotaped me watching Rhode Island and Oregon, and we did play it on the show. And it's me giving a pretty stern pep talk to four dogs to play some good, solid defense. And as you know, they did not. They didn't. My dogs disappointed me. And Oregon gets past Rhode Island, and then in a thriller. And then last night, I mean, what a ball game there. And how about Jordan Bell, huh?
Yeah, Jordan Bell. I mean, he's the straw that stirs the drink. I mean, you can talk about Tyler Dorsey scoring, but let's, you know, those offensive rebounds that he had on those free throws, both against Rhode Island. He killed Rhode Island. Yep. You know that. And he did it again in Michigan. And that's a guy that Oregon has, like, I hate to say it, but I think Duck fans probably take him for granted because he's just so consistently good, 14 to 16 points, 10 to 14 rebounds, and he's a problem. Everybody has to account for him. So, yes, I think he's the straw that stirs the drink.
Yeah, I think that's what was great yesterday is kind of what I mentioned starting out is that he's the guy who puts the hard hat on and goes to work and often doesn't get noticed. But after last night's game, you were there. Every one of his teammates noticed him, didn't it?
Yeah, they did. And I tell you, the NBA scouts are starting to notice him, too. I'm hearing a lot of talk from people who are saying that, you know, you can talk about Dylan Brooks. We can debate whether he's a first-round pick or a second-round pick, or does he stick in the league. Tyler Dorsey is probably a player who plays overseas professionally. That's his upside. But a lot of NBA people looking at Jordan Bell going, hey, if he came back and did another year at Oregon, he's a top 20 pick. I mean, he's the kind of player, he's an interesting player, and he's a guy who if we were going to bet who's going to be in the league 3 years from now, 4 years from now, Jordan Bell might be the best bet on this roster.
Yeah, I was just talking, you know, Orion Ludlow. You know Orion a long time, friend of the family, is my producer over to K2 at 11. And we were talking about that. And I said the thing with Jordan Bell is that he could be a role player in the NBA for a long time because all the guy does is play defense and rebound. Meanwhile, Dylan Brooks, an outstanding college player, but if he's not scoring and if he's not a main cog in a wheel, which he might not be able to be in the NBA, he might not be able to make it in the NBA. But Jordan Bell can do these little things that probably makes him an NBA player if he gets the chance for a long time.
The NBA is a league of length and athleticism, and he's both. Dylan Brooks is neither at his position, whether we want to admit it or not. He's got short arms. He's not. He has the same wingspan as Casey Benson. That came up yesterday. He's not a guy that can create his shot in the NBA. He's a guy in college who's stronger than everybody and can play out of position and still defend. But Jordan Bell has got length. He's got athleticism. And you look around the NBA, there are a whole bunch of guys like Jordan Bell who've had nice careers.
And the one thing that we haven't mentioned is his intelligence. I mean, he's a smart kid when you just talk to him. Yeah. I love interviewing him. Yes. But on the court.
Best quote.
Yeah.
Easily the best quote. Yeah.
And you know, well thought out. I mean, they're all good kids. But the intelligence on the court yesterday. I mean, you got Dylan Ennis going to the line. He's 37 years old. He shoots like 85% from the foul line. You pretty much, everyone's kind of relaxed thinking he's going to make it. But there's Jordan Bell. And you know, that play, don't you feel that play, that offensive rebound down three, was the key to the Ducks winning the game?
Yeah, and it was the Rhode Island game, too. And
stop bringing that up, John!
You know, Jordan Bell said afterward, that's a play they run. Like, they run a play from the defensive screening position on the free throw, and Dylan Brooks and Tyler Dorsey will cross in front of him, and the two defenders they kind of are trying to block out get confused, and Bell ends up in a position where all he has to do is shove his guy out of the way. That's a little play they run. So, you know, the Oregon coaches were yelling at Jordan Bell when the ball was in the air, go get it, Jordan, go get it. And, you know, he just goes and gets it. And then how about him being heady enough to know that they had fouls to give?
Yep.
I don't think anybody else on the court was aware of that. And he went out and they only had four fouls, and he commits a foul. It was a smart play.
Yeah, and at the end, of course, Altman said he wanted Dylan Ennis to commit another foul. But Ennis played defense, not the best defense. They got a good shot. And Altman was upset. It's one of those mistakes. It's only forgivable. It's only forgivable because it didn't go in, right?
Yeah, and look, Dylan Ennis is a sixth-year player.
He's 70.
You know, he's a sixth-year player, and in the heat of the moment, and that shows you what the stakes are like here. Like, Bill Self at Kansas was just talking today in the news conference, and he was saying that he thinks that this game right here in the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, that these games are harder to win than any other game in the tournament. That there's something about trying to get to the Final Four where all of a sudden it's a bottleneck of pressure. You're here in Kansas City. You got to win these two games. And he said it's more pressure than once you get to the Final Four, because the kids, when they get in the Final Four, they think they've won something. They think, hey, that's winning something, getting to a Final Four. But right now, they haven't won anything.
And John, I talked about this coming into the show, about the satisfaction. Like, somebody, we do that thing like, is it a successful season if? And, you know, I think everyone was saying if the Ducks get back to the Elite Eight, it'd be a successful season, especially after Chris Boucher went down. But my thing was, yeah, that's the smart thing to say. But as a sports fan, I feel, and I want to know if you agree, that you got to be greedy because you never know. I mean, Syracuse has one national title. The Ducks went to two in football, and now they fired their coach. Look at the 49ers a few years ago, Kaepernick and Harbaugh. That thing was going to go forever. They were going to get another chance, and then it collapsed. I mean, don't you feel like that there has to be this feeling of, we've got to get there now, because you never know?
And this is a game that is a young man's game. You see freshmen and sophomores who are winning titles. Carmelo Anthony was a freshman.
Yes, the only title.
And Bill Self just talked about it, too, with Kansas. People were talking about the expectations of Kansas. You go to Kansas, you expect to win. And he said, you have to embrace that. You have to embrace the pressure. You have to embrace the stakes. We're supposed to win. We're supposed to be here. And if you're Oregon right now, you sniffed around it a little bit. But you can't sniff around too long, because if you sniff around, somebody else is going to come up and take it. You know, you've got to go get it if you're Oregon. And this is the biggest game in Dana Altman's coaching career at Oregon. It's huge.
I want to talk about Dana Altman. I know you've been critical of how Altman was during the rape investigation. And, you know, that's really taken the shine off of him for you at times. At this point, though, I mean, you're able to separate that and just say, wow, this guy can flat out coach. I mean, where are you with Dana Altman right now? In your head, is this one a tough one for you to kind of, you know, figure out where you are?
No, because I always thought he could coach. I always knew he could coach. I had great respect for him. I go back and I look at what I wrote about him when he was taking a low-seeded Oregon team into the Sweet 16, and how close they looked playing Louisville a few years ago, a Louisville team that ended up winning it. You know, they looked good, and Wisconsin team. My disappointment with him was all about what he did off the court and how he handled it. And I just felt like he really bumbled his way through that investigation. He should have never played the players. I would have had no problem with him had he just said, look, I don't want to play a player who's under investigation for sex assault. It's too serious an allegation for me. I would have had so much more respect for him, because his ideology to me lines up with that thinking. And he and I have talked about it. We've talked about it here. We talked about it last year. It wasn't personal. I just didn't like what he did. I still think the guy's a hell of a coach.
At what point does that ever, like, go away? Is there a point in time where you can let that go, or will that always kind of stain how you feel about Coach Altman?
I want him in, you know, what disappointed me there was not only did he not, he played the guys, he played them, then he flushed them and made it like, hey, they're gone, and put himself in front of them. I thought last year, with the way he handled the Coach Krzyzewski thing with Dylan Brooks, sort of restored some of my faith in him, because I saw him standing up for his players there and taking a stand that, you know, maybe wasn't going to be popular, but it was the right thing to do. Hey, don't talk to my players. I should be the guy talking to my players. Maybe it's going to take another player getting in trouble and seeing Dan Altman handle it differently. I hate for that to happen.
Right.
You know, you don't wish for that to happen, but I want to know that that isn't who he is. That's not his ideology. And, you know, he has said that he shifted his whole recruiting philosophy. He came on this show and said, I shifted my philosophy. I went away from transfer guys. And in my mind, that was him correcting something there, because he had 7 transfers in those couple of years. And even Landon Lucas, who's a Portland kid who's playing at Kansas in tomorrow night's game, he said that when he was considering Oregon, he looked and he saw all the transfers, and he didn't like the lack of stability there. So I think that's something Altman has shifted on, and, you know, I support that.
So my question is, can the Ducks, beat Kansas? And I say, and of course they can. So I'll ask you a better question, because that's what we do. Will they beat Kansas?
They have no shot. They have no shot to win this game. And the question I wanted to ask to Bill Self and Landon Lucas, and I wasn't even joking about it, was, do you guys put those shorts on one leg at a time, or are you jumping in them? They have looked so good in breezing through this tournament. They embarrassed Purdue in the second half yesterday. Their guard play, I think, is going to be too much for Oregon. Their front court, they play like Oregon, but they're better. They're better at 4 positions, I think. And I think unless Oregon has a special shooting night, I think Oregon's going to get run out of the building tomorrow. I hate to say it, but I just think that they're up against a machine right now, and I can't see anybody in this tournament beating Kansas right now.
Yeah, that's as strong as you can come out. I agree with you that it's going to take a ridiculous performance. Somebody's going to have to go 8 for 9, you know, from 3. And shoot, you know, Dylan Brooks is going to somehow have to find a shot, because that's the one thing that is – you know, I was up in the air on Dylan Brooks and the NBA, and right now I'm kind of shying away from thinking it could be success because of just what you said. I mean, Rhode Island said, you're not going to beat us. He went 7 for 20. He had 12 yesterday. So when they concentrate on him getting his own shot because of the lack of quickness, his only way is brute force. And the guy is a great college basketball player, but I don't see Kansas.
Yeah.
I don't see Kansas because, you know, you talked all about, you know, how they play in that, like the Ducks offensively, but defensively, they are so long and so fast. I don't see Dylan Brooks being able to get free. So that's so much pressure on Dorsey, who's been fantastic. But even, I mean, Rhode Island's not Kansas. I wish we were, you know, and even, and, yeah. Michigan, I mean, Michigan basically caught fire for six games, have been mediocre. Kansas is not mediocre in any way, shape, or form, and they're not mediocre, and you're not going to out-coach, you know, Bill Self either. You know what I mean? Like, as good a coach Dana Altman is, it's not like Kansas is going to come out there with a terrible game plan.
I keep trying to build a case for Oregon winning this game, and I'll say things like, you know, what if Kansas's guards got in foul trouble? Or what if Landon Lucas, you know, rolls an ankle and he's not in there? Can Jordan Bell, you know, control the paint? But it starts falling apart because I just can't see Oregon scoring enough points to win this game. I still think Kansas is going to score, you know, in the high 80s, maybe 90 points against the Ducks. And I don't know that Oregon can keep pace. How about if Tyler Dorsey shoots 8 for 9, if Dylan Brooks goes nuts and plays the way he can play? And then on top of that, I think they're going to need a special performance from somebody we don't expect, like Peyton Pritchard, you know, comes out and scores 15 and has 9 assists or something like that. Then maybe they're in this game. But people are saying, what shot do you give them? And I go, there's a good chance they get beat by 20 tomorrow night.
Yeah, I mean, I always think that in these games, I mean, they did it yesterday. They blew out the lead and won by 30. But I always think in these games it's hard to win by 20 just because there's nerves on both sides. But I don't see Oregon winning. And like you just described some things that happened yesterday. Lucas had 2 points, you know, 4 fouls and 2 points. He was a complete non-factor, except his one basket was pretty impressive. But and they still, you know, I mean, he had a huge dunk, and they still crushed them. And that's what I'm with you. I mean, I just don't. And by the way, how's the crowd going to be tomorrow, John?
No, that's it. You got a home game. You got a great coach and Bill Self. And Oregon's had a great season. And Landon Lucas was just talking about it. He grew up rooting for the Ducks. Now here he is in, you know, his final year in college, and he's trying to kill him in this tournament. He's trying to knock him out of this tournament. It's you know, Oregon fans, you got to be proud of what this team has done. You have to hope that Jordan Bell comes back for another year. They're getting a pretty impressive freshman who's coming in next year. And this, again, becomes something to build on. But it goes back to your point. When you are sniffing around these things, you got to get to a Final Four. And you've got to get it, you know, and celebrate that. So, you know, to Oregon tomorrow night, if they win this game, I'll be the first person, like, nodding and going right on. That's big for the program.
Yeah, and look, as you said, miracles have happened. You know, you just – NC State won a national title. They weren't close to being the best team. Sometimes crazy stuff happens. I just feel like you said there's so much that lined up, and then you end with, oh, yeah, they're playing 40 miles from their, you know, from Kansas' university, which, by the way, you don't get a better fan base than Kansas. You know what I mean? So it's like beating Kansas at Kansas to go to the Final Four. I don't know how many, you know, people would think that's a possibility. All right, we're wrapping up here. I need some help here.
Yeah.
So John, the Sklar brothers are coming on.
All right.
I've heard you do these interviews with comics before, but I'm petrified because, you know, when we're on the mic, that's where we're supposed to be like, okay, we're the pro, whoever we're interviewing might be a little bit more nervous, but at least when you're doing a sports radio show and you bring in a comic, you have that thing where you're like, well, I know more about sports. These guys don't, there's A, two of them, B, they're completely comfortable in front of a microphone. And they do sports radio. What? Give me something. Give me something where I can get the
I've
edge here.
I've had those
here.
Guys in there before. All you got to do is tee those guys up and let them go.
All right,
tee them up and let them go. They play off each other. You're hardly going to get to talk. I know that's going to frustrate you, but it's the two of them are funny. They're knowledgeable, and you know, get one of them talking. They play off each other. They're terrific.
And they're not mean, right? That's the one thing.
No,
they're not mean.
They're the nicest guys ever. I mean, that's why they're doing the Burger King commercials and stuff. Ask them how the Burger King commercial changed their life, and then just sit back.
Okay, because I got, you know, they're the twins. I don't want to be the guy. So what's it like being twins? Do you share the same brain?
Yeah.
You know, like I'm trying. I'm a little worried. So I think I'm just going
to. What you do is you ask them. The first thing you ask them is, are you guys brothers?
Right, exactly. Because hey, you look you alike. Do you know each other?
Yeah,
how long you known each other?
John. And I wonder too, like when in a social setting, when they ran into women when they were younger, did one of them tend to do better with the ladies?
That's a good question.
And how did that fly? How does that fly between two brothers who are very similar in personality and their act and their shtick is all together? That's fascinating.
Yeah, the first question, though, is they went to Michigan. So we have something in common right now.
Yeah, I'm a little.
But the good thing is we can bond because I feel like crap because Oregon beat Rhode Island. They feel like crap because Oregon beat Michigan. So our listeners will hate this segment as we kind of, you know, commiserate about Oregon hurting our feelings. But you know what? You know, I only got an hour left and I'm out of here. So whatever. At this point, you know, it's like gravy. I will tell you, your building's still standing. I didn't change much. And I don't think Glisten Hefe hate me. So I think it's been a success. So I appreciate
it. Well, I will bring you back when I'm or I'm out. And listeners, you can tell me, tweet at me, tell me this, at John Canzano BFG. Tell me, is Craig Burnback the permanent fill-in guy? That's the question. Answer it.
Only say if it's a yes. I will say this. I had a great guy at the Blazers game come up to me. We both know. I don't want to call him out. But this is what he came up to me and said. He goes, hey, thanks for not sucking on the radio. So I'll take it, right? You'll take that.
Love it.
All right, John, have a good time. Get some barbecue.
Right. Thanks,
we'll see
you
when you get back. Yep, that's John Canzano, a guest on his own show. It's a fascinating world when you can just flip the microphone like that. You are listening to The Bald-Faced Truth. I am Craig Burnback, and coming up, the Sklar Brothers. Two are better than one. Going to talk about their show that's coming up at Helium this weekend, tonight and tomorrow. You're listening to The Bald-Faced Truth on 750 and 102.9 The Game.
Someone should all of them listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
John Canzano is on Sports Radio 750 The Game.
Okay. Here we go.
The Bald-Faced Truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 102.9 and 750, The Game.
Good afternoon, Portland. I am not John Canzano. I'm Craig Burnback, filling in for the bald one. See me on television, KATU. I'll be on tonight at 6:30 and 11. I'm petrified here of my next guests. You know, sometimes when you're in this business, you get to meet people you really like. Not often when you're a local sports guy, is it comedy guys?
Yeah.
But right across from me are Randy and Jason Sklar. Hardest name in the world to pronounce, by the way.
Yeah, three consonants in a row.
It's just a big slur and get it, say it fast.
It's Kurnowski.
It's the Krzyzewski of comedy.
Yeah, exactly. That's we are.
But I love comedy and I love sports, and you guys have combined those two things. And I was telling them when they walked in, I'm super nervous because usually in my job, I somehow find the advantage to make myself feel good about myself, which is, one, I'm the professional communicator. That's what I tell my wife all the time. That's my job.
Yes.
So when I'm in front of the microphone, if I'm interviewing someone, I assume that I might be more comfortable.
Right.
But if I'm interviewing someone that might be a TV or comic, usually I'm like, well, I know more about sports than they do, and they're on sports radio, and then you two schmoes come in.
Sorry.
And you do it all.
Look, we probably don't know more than you do about sports, but we love sports. I mean, I think we probably share a common love of sports. And we should mention that our feature act for the weekend that we're going to be this weekend at Helium Comedy Club in Portland, and our co-host of one of our podcasts, Dumb People Town, Daniel Van Kirk, is here.
Hi, everybody.
And he knows a lot about sports, too. But, I mean, we just love it. We were just over at the Portland Timbers at the field. We met Timber Joey.
He tried to attack me with a chainsaw.
Yeah, unbelievable. That guy just cuts everything. We asked if he, like, hung out. If he ever like went to like kids, is like booked for kids' birthday parties. He's like
the chainsaw.
He's like, do you bring the chainsaw? He's like, yeah.
He says he goes into schools and reads books to the kids.
And then I asked him if he just saws the book in half when he's done reading.
And he does every time.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, you got the chainsaw, you got to use it.
I'm like, you're like a positive leather face. That's what I
right. You leave them smiling, not bleeding. Right. Which is good.
The Timbers are like an amazing
phenomenon,
and I think perfectly suited for Portland. I think soccer is still in the United States, not as mainstream, even though we grew up in St. Louis, huge soccer town. Huge. I mean, we grew up with the St. Louis Steamers, major indoor soccer league.
Thank God it was St. Louis that got that team and not Cleveland.
Exactly. Let's just be 100% honest here. But we like had our 12th birthday party at a Steamers game. So we were and played indoor soccer and whatnot. We loved it, but it hasn't really caught on. I think with English Premier League soccer and the idea that you can watch more games professionally here, you really get a chance. And I think the popularity has grown. Of course, Portland would be into an alternative sport.
Of course.
Right?
Got to.
Like the Timbers, and they only use...
Like, if Portland got a baseball team, it would probably be like an old-timey baseball team where the gloves are the size of your hand.
And everybody's got a current handlebar mustache, and
they already do.
You don't know where... Exactly. You don't know where the field is. It's just a pop-up thing. It just pops up anywhere. It's like, where are we playing today? I don't know. Check their Instagram.
Right. That's the only way you find it.
Check their
media.
Instagram. That's it. They'll find out. And there's, like, a farmer's market at second base.
Yeah, literally. Like, have you tried our heirloom tomatoes? We just harvested them from left center.
Okay, great.
And it wouldn't matter who won as long as you got hugs.
Got hugs.
Sure. Hugs, and hugs.
Look, and I say weed dispensary in both dugouts.
I think you call the team the PDX carpets from the airport.
It would be perfect, and the sneakers would be made out of the
PDX
carpet
a la Damian Lillard.
I wish you could buy a team. Get better. get bigger.
Get richer.
Come on. What are you doing here if you can't bring
that's
me a team?
That's PDX carpets, and our motto is, yes, we match the drapes.
That's right.
The PDX carpets, our motto would be, we leave it all out on the floor.
Yeah.
Come on!
You guys have everything but the money, right? That's what it came down to.
That's been our problem.
Yeah, you explained. You just
the biggest problem of our life.
Yeah,
everything but the money.
All right, we do have something in common. I went to University of Rhode Island. You went to Michigan. We both suffered losses to Oregon. We're now in the state of Oregon.
Yes.
Where I admitted yesterday on the air, basically 3 hours of me saying I couldn't root for the Ducks because I hate them because they defeated me. And once you defeat me, you're my mortal enemy.
That's right.
At least for a while.
That's right.
You watched the game yesterday?
Oh, yeah.
We were with a bunch of other University of Michigan alums, and it was heartbreaking for us because this team came together at the right time. And
Michigan should have won the game. I'll be honest with you. Oregon lucky to escape with the win. Michigan made a poor decision on the last three possessions were terrible for Michigan.
Not good.
You could have won that game. They didn't win the game. They didn't play great. No great interior rebounding.
I didn't think either team, by the way, played amazingly. Both teams looked a little shaky, if you ask me. Oregon lucky to get away with the win, but you know Michigan lost.
You got
to
tip your cap.
They stuck through it. They went to their bread and butter. Tyler Dorsey, and they went to their bread and butter of rebounding. That rebound on the missed field on the missed free throw. That rebound on the missed field goal, which they then kicked back out. They took it to Michigan in the moments that they needed to. They didn't look good all game.
And Derek Walton had the ball at the end of the game. Could have shot a two. I don't know why he was shooting a three.
It wasn't a bad look, though.
It wasn't a bad look,
but why is he shooting from 22 feet out? Earlier, two possessions earlier, he penetrated, got the guy to go with him, step back within the arc. If he makes that shot, we win.
Now I love you guys even more. You're getting angry as you talk.
Yeah, oh no,
which
we're
is
mad.
Basically
we're mad.
Me
we're mad at our own team.
Yes.
Well, but we're different than you because I don't get mad at Oregon. I'm like, Oregon just played their game and essentially
they won. So
game
I'm mad at Michigan.
Michigan lost. Yeah. We lost that game more than Oregon won that game. Oregon won by the fact that Michigan just couldn't do that.
Execute down the stretch.
That's the difference. I'm from Jersey.
Yeah.
So the moment you walked in, I counted how many people, and I was like, I could take those two, but there's four. So now I can't.
I know where the door is.
Exactly.
Jersey.
Exactly. And my back's here, so I see everybody.
Look around.
You got it.
Did you watch the game with these guys?
Yeah, I did. It did. Yeah.
Was it ugly?
Yeah, I mean, it's an exercise in watching people go through grief.
Yeah.
Even while it's happening, predicting it's going to happen.
In anticipation
of
it.
Is that a measurable grief scale? But yeah. I mean, I'm an Illinois kid, so we're just hanging on to the NIT.
Yeah.
We got nothing. So I can't really say
anything. He is a Chicago Cubs fan, so he literally enjoyed a world championship. Literally enjoyed the biggest.
I'm good for a while.
Yeah, you're good for a while.
So did you hate him a little bit right then?
A little bit, because we're Cardinals fans. Grew up in St. Louis and huge Cardinals fans. So yeah,
This is my bad. I assume everyone knows that you're a Cardinals fan because I do, so my fault.
So we are a huge
Not just little Cardinals fan. These guys are off their...
We did a documentary trying to get Jose Oquendo, utility man extraordinaire, into Cooperstown, which ended up with us just getting a homemade plaque that we made hung on the utility closet in Cooperstown. I mean, that was the end result of it.
Utility plaque. Oquendo loved it.
We're in the building. You get asked twin questions all the time. I'm not going to do
Let's
that.
Let's dispense with those.
Right. They're twins. They look alike. Means they can murder me, blame the other one. That's what scares me a little bit about
it's
twins.
It's a DNA switch.
But Cardinal fans, you guys agree on so much. Comedy, it's your act, it's your life together. Sports, you both love. But when you were kids, was there a time where you were like, no, Tommy Herr is way more important than George Hendrick. Well, like, did you guys have those internal wars?
That's a great two great pulls. I have a great George Hendrick story that somebody in St. Louis told me, and I forgot who it was. You know, Silent George was his name. He never spoke to the media because I think he said one thing as a rookie and it came back to bite him. So like he would not say anything to the media. He also would pull his pants all the way, like the stirrups were all the way down almost underneath the shoe.
Right before that was cool.
Yeah, before that was cool.
Before everyone
Manny Ramirez was doing it, like underneath the shoe almost.
when the Cardinals won the World Series in 1982, somebody said, and there's got to be footage of this somewhere. They win. Bruce Sutter strikes out Gorman Thomas. 1982, we win.
Cardinals are in the field.
Cardinals are in the field celebrating. George Hendrick apparently spun on his heel, which was covering up his pants because they were so low. Spun on his heel, walked right out through the outfield gate, got into his car in his uniform and drove home. That's how much he did not want to speak to or
anybody.
The media or anything.
Just here to play, man. Just here to play, man.
So he's now a batting coach for the Marlins?
Which means he has to speak to people.
Right. And he was a first base coach, maybe. No, batting coach. And we were behind the dugout, my son and I, my son's eight, behind the dugout at Dodger Stadium watching the game. And everyone was saying, Hendrick, because they didn't know who he was. They were just saying the last name they could read on his jersey to get him to roll a ball across the dugout to them, which I'm like, he's not going to do
it. Earn a foul ball.
Earn it. Right.
So he's not turning around. No one's turning around. I said to my son, say, hey, Silent George, and see if he turns around. And he says it, and he spins around like, say, what? That did not come from a little kid. And my son said, can I please have a ball, Silent George Hendrick? And he was like, of course, rolled him a ball. Didn't give a ball to anyone else. You just had to know that.
Then he walked out the back gate into his car halfway through the seventh.
George Hendrick was the classic 19 home runs, 87 RBIs.
When that mattered, though.
And he was the power hitter on our team.
Right, when you could do that. You guys did crazy stuff. I mean, I bring up Tommy Herr, and we're going to get too into the car.
Less than 10 home runs, over 100 RBIs. That, when has that happened?
That'll never
I'm going to stand up.
Yeah.
This is my height.
Yeah.
This is all I got.
Yeah.
I played shortstop until you get, you know, better.
So you get to the point where...
And they're like, you play second now.
Right, yeah. Right.
So Tommy Herr, I'm a Yankee fan.
Yeah.
But Tommy Herr, I loved him because here was this guy who didn't hit the home runs, drove in 100 RBIs, hasn't really been done since.
Right.
And on a club that was winning titles.
Yeah.
So I loved... That's why...
He was a great contact hitter and a great number two hitter. So he was the number two hitter in our lineup, and that was the guy who you're like, this guy's just going to keep driving in runs. He's just going to keep, you know... Because Vince Coleman was so good. What happened was Vince Coleman would get on first on a little like nubber, or he would slam it down into the turf, chop it down, get on first, and then in steal third. So now he's at third, and then
with no outs.
So Tommy Herr, all he has to do is hit a sac fly ground out.
Yeah, he grounded out all the time.
Ground out to second base, and you got an RBI. Yeah. And that was his.
If you didn't play on concrete and turf, you might not have won.
Get hats off to Whitey Herzog. Where's his 30 for 30?
Yeah.
That guy changed the game of baseball.
Where's Whitey?
I love the fire and the anger.
Yeah,
my whole life is based on, you know, fire and anger.
Sure.
I feel it in here, but with a smile, which is great.
Which is what we do.
The amount of love that's happening in this room right now with angry rhetorical questions.
Yes. Yeah.
It's, where's this at?
Yeah. Where's that? Where's his 30 for 30? And he's just nodding going, yeah.
Yes, I agree.
I'm a Greg Nettles fan, which is a guy like, you know, that he hit the home run, 32 home runs was a big deal, 28 home runs is a big deal, and played third base, but he did it at the time when, you know.
George Brett, he had to live in the shadow of George Brett.
And Mike Schmidt.
Now I'm going to throw off. I hate those guys. I hate Wayne Oleson so much. You can appreciate this because he came and played third base after they traded Nettles. Poor Wayne Oleson.
This poor guy.
You know,
what about people who call him Craig Nettles?
Oh, yeah. And my name's Craig, so that's why he's my favorite player.
Craig.
It's that pathetic. Yeah. I was four.
Yeah.
I wanted to like the Yankees. I was like, that guy has my name because I'm dumb. I couldn't read, really.
Greg Nettles.
It's great. G-R-A-I-G. Born August 20th, 1944. I don't know anything.
G-R-A-I-G.
I know nothing about
G-R-A-I-G.
The guy. You're here in Portland. You're at Helium.
Yes. One of the best comedy clubs in the country, and it's such a fun club to play. The tickets are selling. We just got like our ticket counts and they jumped up a bunch for tonight's show, but there are still tickets available for the early and the late show, but they're going. Early show tomorrow night will probably sell out, but the late show, it's not even that late. I think it's close to like 9:30. So please come. We'd love to see you guys out there. You'll see a really nice dose. Dan's stand-up is fantastic. He's kind of new at it, but he is really grown like leaps and bounds in the last little period of
time.
There's
good sports references mixed in with just straight up comedy, and it's a fun
night. About Portland too. We're hoping to sort of find what's funny about Portland, even in a post Portlandia world, which is a difficult thing to do.
It is. We used to be a gem. Yeah. I got here 2007.
Okay.
And so I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, but you come post 2010 to Portland.
People are mad.
Oh, they're angry.
People are mad.
They're like, what'd you do to us?
Yeah.
Even if you're making fun of us, more and more people want to be here.
Right. And they don't want you doing your special in Portland because now people will learn. So you
That's
could,
right.
It used to be if you came and did anything here as you know, celebrities.
It was a great thing.
But now they're going to be mad.
They're like,
at you.
Stop. Stop it.
You caused the traffic.
It's like, it's like Austin, Texas. Same thing. There are like 140 new people coming into Austin every day. And they get off the plane, and within 15 seconds, they're like, I remember when this place was so much better.
Yeah.
You're like, you just got here.
Remember when I was on the jetway?
Oh,
way
man.
Cooler.
Austin's changed, man. That you, people are going
to
start
you guys try
Portland.
To keep it weird. You can't keep Portland weird.
Remember when Southeast was cool? Huh? Remember when there was just a bunch of people talking to themselves about socialism and pushing carts around?
Remember when I got shot on my bike 12 times?
Right, that was good.
That was when it was cool. That was when Southeast was what Southeast should have been.
Yeah. People got jobs now. What fun is this?
How dare they? How dare they put two convenient Stumptown coffees on my block?
By How the way, dare they?
In the time it took us to do this interview, 8 new condos have gone up.
Yeah.
And it's your fault.
It's our fault.
Because you probably brought fans here.
Just by being funny.
I have to ask this question because I always think about this when with twins, especially that do so much together. John Canzano, I said, what question should I ask them? And I was afraid, but he brought it up. Did one of you guys do better with the ladies?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Good question.
Probably Randy did better with the ladies.
I did a little better
on.
With the ladies early on.
Early on.
You'll accept that, Randy?
I caught up later.
I'll begrudgingly accept that.
I was
a later bloomer in that department.
Some would say he still hasn't bloomed.
Yeah.
How was that for you? I mean, you knew it wasn't the looks.
No.
So it was kind of like that.
Yeah, because I didn't even
you.
Have glasses back
then. It's all about the confidence.
It is.
That's all about the confidence.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't trailblazing, to use a local team reference.
Yeah.
Randy
was a stone cold killer.
Randy was a trailblazer. I was a jailblazer.
Stop it.
No. That means neither one of you won a championship.
That's the sad part.
Stopped right in the Sabonis.
Mm.
You guys have been doing this for a long time. The one thing that I really enjoy about you guys is that you don't hide, you know, you're not trying to act like we're not twins. You don't run away from it. But it really isn't, you're two best friends talking about stuff that you like.
Yeah.
But my brother and I can't talk 5 minutes without like
getting into an argument.
Oh, it's just awful. And it's awful. And I've never apologized.
Well, you're a
to
hothead.
I
spent 15 minutes with you and like, I want to punch you in the face.
No, but it is interesting that you say that because, you know, we made a very conscious choice early on to not make all of our comedy about being twins because we felt like that was a very limiting area. That would be painting ourselves in the corner. We're like, what we can do, which is kind of cool, is give people a glimpse into what it means to have this relationship and that sort of unspoken ability to go back and forth. I mean, let us be the Splash Brothers. No offense, but of comedy. Well, no, in the sense
Who are you? LeVar Ball? What is happening
Michael
right now?
Jordan cannot do me.
Never lost.
You're gonna come to me,
and Stephen A. No, I think our attitude
that is blasphemous.
We could aspire to want to have that sort of chemistry, and through the relationship of showing that we're on the same wavelength, sort of expose what I think a lot of people see as wish fulfillment a little bit when they see twins.
I wish I had someone to bounce that stuff off of, and we try and show them that.
And the fun of this relationship, the fun when we start riffing and getting on a run with something and try to crack each other up and try to one-up each other with more comedy, that is what we hope to show the audience and benefit. Do you think that's pretty fair, Dan?
Oh, yeah, completely. Yeah, it's building something together. You're not really tearing it apart, and you're not pointing it like, oh, this is why it happens. It's just doing the thing together.
We're not creating a fictitious argument and a fight between each other.
I always found that to be weird. Someone would say, well, why don't you be the smart one and you be the dumb one? And we were like, well, we're twins.
We're both dumb.
We're both, both idiots.
Two dummies.
No, but like it's more nuanced than that. And I guess we feel like as twins, we don't have to fit into these archetypal, I'm the evil one, I'm the nice one, I'm the smart one, I'm the dumb one, I'm the one who's crazy, and I'm the one who's trying to reel him in. That just doesn't exist. We're two people who are experiencing our lives at a similar pace. So how do we...
And with more shared experiences than any two people on earth.
And doing it at the same time. I mean, my kids are 2 years apart, and I do really appreciate the fact that they are growing up pretty close together, not in the same way that we are.
Not the same as us?
Not the same as us, because they're in different spots. You know, my almost 12-year-old daughter is experiencing things that the 9, almost 10
isn't close to yet.
Yeah, so...
You hope.
Yeah, I mean, please. You don't know my 9, almost 10-year-old. She's very...
advanced.
I just brought you down. I just brought the real world into
all
this.
All the stuff I have to think about.
This show's going to suck tonight.
No,
it's all going to be my fault.
This show's going to be great because he's going to be doing anything he can to not think about
how fast his kids are growing up.
So committed and in the moment of our comedy.
Just literally singing Cats in the Cradle in my brain.
Do you apologize to each other? Because I think that's always the hardest thing with family and, you know, intimate relationships.
I don't think we do as so much. We probably should do more of that, but I think it's sort of an unspoken, like, if we have beef, we do it, we get it out there, and then we're done with it, and we move on quickly. That's one positive thing that we've had. So we don't ignore the beef. We have it. We're done with it. Move on.
I think that's the joy of your relationship, probably, that other people don't have, is that, and you're not, you can't be that mad at the guy, right?
And it teaches you, you know, sometimes you screw up. Sometimes you lay it out there and you screw up and you deserve to be reprimanded. So it also is a lesson in just taking it sometimes. You got to take it. Yep. I was an idiot right there. I deserve the, you know what I mean? So,
and I know he's talking about me.
In those moments, you learn what it's like to just take some grief. You got it. Sometimes it's got to be dished out in your face, and that's what it is. And then you just move on.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we have to do after the losses to Oregon, right? We have to learn. I can't learn to move on. You can't. I can see your face. You've not moved on.
We are the worst. If dudes did not get dunked on, we wouldn't have posters.
That's right. We are the worst. When that thing comes, you don't even want to see our text chains with our friends who are like deep, deep Michigan fans and whatnot when they start playing.
We get so mad at our own team.
So mad and so dark, and if that ever got published, like, I'd be embarrassed.
My wife secretly videotaped me giving a pep talk to four dogs during our game, and they played it. So I'm feeling you. And
I love your wife right now. Way to go.
She's phenomenal.
I told them, the dog, I said, steal their soul. That's what I wanted Rhode Island to do. Steal their soul.
By the way, Rhode Island was stealing a lot of souls throughout this whole tournament.
And then we laid an egg.
Hey, just like that happened.
It was similar because you guys were out in front. I'm sorry.
No, we both couldn't get a rebound on a foul shot. Other team's foul shot. The easiest rebound in the world.
You already have position.
Right. It's a gift.
Idiots.
All right. We're okay. We're okay.
We're not okay.
But they have your therapy is your show.
Yes. Come see us tonight. Come see us work out all of our angst on stage tonight.
Two shows tonight. Two shows tomorrow. Correct?
Yeah. If you go to portland.heliumcomedy.com. Or just call up there, or just Google Portland Helium.
I'm telling you, it is such a cool, fun thing to go see live comedy. It's not something people do all the time, and
this show's a good one. It's a really good one. Dan's so great. Our host is fantastic.
Adam Posse.
Adam Posse is a great local comedian. Really good. The whole show, top to bottom, is fun.
And I'm going to say, as a fanboy, there's no act like the Sklar Brothers. It's impossible because they're the only two people with that DNA. And if Dan's hanging around with you, he's got to be hysterical.
He is hysterical.
You can't be with these people. And
I got to keep up.
They don't hang out.
He co-hosts our podcast, our podcasts, Dumb People Town. We do Sklarbro Country and we do Dumb People Town, which is the new one on Feral Audio. Dan co-hosts it with us and brings such a great energy.
Our fans love Dan, I think, at times more than they love us. So
they're like sports fans. Sometimes they're mad at you. He's the guy. I get it.
You can do better. Here comes the rookie.
I survived. I can't believe.
You did great.
I was so nervous. I told my wife. I mean, I called my buddy from Michigan just to find out somebody that you guys might know.
Gave a pep talk to the dogs. Dogs gave you a pep talk.
Yeah. Dogs barked back at you.
Tough, man. You did a great interview. This was super fun.
So fun.
I'm so excited. It doesn't matter. I have 20 more minutes of this show. I might just sing the rest of it. But guys, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Saturday night at Helium, you'll see three of the funniest guys I've ever met. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We're not done yet. The talent of the show is leaving. We got one more segment. Hey, I'm Craig Birnbach filling in for John Canzano on the BFT. You're listening to 750 and 102.9 The Game.
Yo, this is Ari Spears, not Mike Tyson, and you're listening to John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Hello, everybody. Craig Birnbach filling in for John Canzano. My final segment of my two-day stint. I've survived. I've had a great time. I haven't set any fires. I haven't thrown up or cursed on the microphone, which is always a success, I think. I just survived one of the scariest interviews. Sklar Brothers, two guys that I think are hysterical, coming on, twins that know sports and comedy better at me than both, but we had a great time. Remember, they're at Helium tonight and tomorrow. Finishing up here right after me, the irregular guys coming on for an hour show before it's more Elite Eight basketball, NCAA tournament coverage right here on The Game. Plenty more games, including, you know, as you heard earlier, we talked a little UCLA, another Pac-12 team, trying to get to the Final Four. I don't think they're going to win tonight. I think I'm going to go with Kentucky. As much as I'm not a huge Kentucky fan with John Calipari, I've talked enough about how I form grudges. University of Rhode Island, Calipari used to be at UMass, kind of was our biggest rival, so that residual effect. But and I'll be rooting for UCLA because we had Ben Mankiewicz on, Turner Classic Movies, a good friend of mine, and he loves UCLA, and I wish him joy, and I want him to be happy if they do win. Blazers, of course, last night beat the Knicks easily. It didn't even get ugly. They did what they're supposed to do against a struggling team. They got the victory. They're a game back now of Denver. They've got 11 games left to go. Damian Lillard, another 30-point night. This guy, some fans don't want to make the playoffs. Well, Damian Lillard does, and he's more important than you. That's the one thing, is that this guy wants to make the playoffs. Last year, I kind of thought it would have been way better for the Blazers not to make the playoffs because it was either all or nothing. They were going to get a first-round pick or nothing, and they ended up with nothing. This year, they already have three first-round picks. So in my opinion, if they make the playoffs, you're looking, or get the 12th overall pick, you're looking at one or two spot difference. And with three first-round picks, if you want to move up, you can move up. You've got the ammunition with those three picks. So I don't think it's as important because I'm not so sure how much higher your pick's going to be, whether you make the playoffs, because you're not going to get one of those top five picks unless there's some kind of miracle here. I had a great week. I was just kind of trying to think of the highlights of my week other than the Sklar Brothers, which was to me my favorite point, to meet two guys that you really like and enjoy, and they were funny and they were nice. I really enjoyed you guys, you know, doing the Burnbacks Reacts thing. You guys came up with those questions, didn't know me, and like a real thought process. You wanted me to succeed, which I appreciate, because when you're going on to someone else's show, sometimes you're wondering, you know, what are the politics are? I don't know if John shoved me down your throats. So I really want to thank Hefe and Gliss for, you know, you guys accepted me. I feel like I'm almost a part of the family.
Hey, Craig, this is the first time we met, and you're a great guy. You did a fantastic job. You're the first person I've ever worked with filling in the best. Okay, we'll put it there, but I couldn't give you any advice on how to improve it. You did fantastic, man.
Well, I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you got my vote. You come back anytime whenever we need a guest host. I thought you did a great job. So.
And I didn't even bring coffee. You know, I didn't even bring treats. You know,
you know we got coffee in the break room, right?
No one told me there was a break room.
Yeah.
I was happy to find the bathroom.
Stumptown coffee in there.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's for people that come back. Coffee's for closers.
I got to tell you, I've been saying, you know, Ben Mankiewicz, my friend, said I was 16. I often say I'm 12. I hate coffee. I don't like grown-up drinks.
Really?
I'm with you on that.
It's hot dirt water.
What is it about this? Because he doesn't drink coffee.
Nope.
Kiki doesn't drink coffee. I don't understand this. I drink about 8 cups of coffee during the day.
Gliss, when you were a kid and you tried coffee, did you like it?
No, not until I was probably like 16 or so.
And what'd you do? You just drank enough of it until you didn't hate it, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it's kind of an acquired taste.
Like beer, right? The first time you tried beer, you didn't like it, right?
Yeah, that's probably true.
That's blasphemy.
I don't acquire taste. Like I said, I mean, like as Ben said, it's all or nothing with me. I tried coffee. I'm like, that's disgusting. That you're literally running hot water through some dirt, and then you get the residual, and then you drink it, and you throw a bunch of sugar in it, and some people are like, well, put some mocha in it, and it tastes delicious.
I don't need any sugar.
Well, see, he watches romantic comedies, but he drinks his coffee black. You know, he's a tough guy. See, people have told me, well, yeah, you're not going to like it, but if you get like a mocha or something with some whipped cream, I'm like, have you heard this thing? It's called hot chocolate. It's fantastic. It's chocolate with milk warmed up. And they always ask you, do you want whipped cream on it? And I'm like, of course I do. Why would I say no to more sugar and fun? So I like hot chocolate, but coffee, I know people drink it to keep going. You've noticed, I don't need an energy boost. Am I wrong? That's
I would agree with that. I think you have plenty of energy on your own.
Right. Me on caffeine, on a lot of caffeine. You don't want to know that guy.
That could be a little dangerous. Right. I could see that.
You don't want that. This glass wouldn't be enough. Like, you would be like, I'm just going to be on floor seven. We'll do this on floor seven. I don't need to see you.
Produce from remotely.
Yeah, because I've never had like that energy problem where like people are like, oh, I need to pick me up. I like to sleep and I'm very tired at times, but I can convince myself like when I need that energy to just go. I drink iced tea, which has a little caffeine in it, but it doesn't have that same burst. But you know, I put the sugar in the iced tea. I don't want tea without sugar either. I mean, admittedly, I'm probably going to die because we have a theme here. It's called sugar. I do enjoy the sugar, but no, I wish I could acquire some tastes, you know, because like, I don't like mustard. Do you know how annoying that is?
That's an odd one. I've never heard that before.
There's so many varieties too. You know, it's like, look at all this. You can have yellow mustard. You can have spicy mustard. And they put it on tons of things that I like. It stinks being the 10-year-old that you finally get to go to McDonald's. You're like, I'd like that cheeseburger, but no mustard, please. And if there's mustard on it, it's ruined. It's like ruined. I can't like, and I want to like mustard. The one taste I've acquired is sushi. I don't love sushi, but I don't hate it. And the first time I tried it, I hated it. And I was so disappointed because it's so much fun. I mean, you get a menu to pick out all these, and it looks awesome. It looks like candy. Sushi, you know, it's all wrapped up. It's different colors. And you can trade. Like, you could get six, I get six, and then I trade, I get two of yours. I mean, it's awesome. And then the first time I tried it, I'm like, oh, that's awful. But I, you know.
So what kind of sushi do you eat then?
Well, see, I cheat
you
a little bit.
You just go with the California roll?
Well, no, like, there's like a Philly one that has, like, salmon in it.
Oh, right.
But I think they actually cook it. And there's a few other where it's a little bit cooked, but there's cream cheese in that Philly roll or whatever. And I, you know, you put cheese or chocolate on dirt, and I'd be like, well, that's some good dirt right there. And you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter. So that's that mask.
You got to put some cream cheese in your coffee, apparently.
That might, you know, but chocolate, there you go. But I just drink the chocolate. But no, I have, my wife loved sushi. And, you know, I do, you know, tend to want to keep her because look at me, I'm not going to do any better. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to keep trying. And she worked with me to find two or three. But I mean, I just thought it was going to be the coolest thing the first time. Like, there are people that, like, I don't like anything but, you know, the same stuff and meat and potatoes. I'm not like that. Like, I go in with like, oh, I really, this is going to be cool. And I'm excited. And then I tried. I'm like, oh, that's awful. This is terrible. And everyone has fun going to sushi, you know, like it's the cool thing to do. Like, oh, I found a new sushi place, which I still don't understand how they're different. I mean, it's raw fish. You don't cook it. I don't get it. What makes sushi better? What makes it better?
I judge sushi by if my wife likes it, it's good. If she doesn't, it's not good.
Because it tastes the same to you?
Yeah. I've got no frame of reference for sushi.
Yeah, but it's so... I mean, it's like going into a candy store. I mean, I love going to frozen yogurt because you have all those choices, you know? Like, I love that. Like, a little of this, a little of that. And sushi, to me, felt like a grown-up candy store because you get to pick all these different varieties and, you know, as adults, we say share, but I'm a kid, so I'm like, we trade. You know, like, I'll give you three of these for two of those because I know that's more expensive. You know what I mean? Like, it's a cool adult way to act like a kid.
I got to say, I think I'm going to be having sushi for dinner
right
now.
I've sold it.
In fact, my oldest son turns 10 today. His favorite thing in the world is California rolls. So I think I'm having sushi for dinner.
See, you started your kid young on that. So, like, you got him to eat. I wonder if I would have had it when I was younger, if I would have liked it.
What's funny is he's, like, the pickiest eater otherwise. I mean, that's, like, the only... You know, that's like the one thing he'll eat besides like pasta, mac and cheese, grilled cheese, anything like that.
See, me and your son can eat every meal together because what you just named is like my favorite stuff. Because once again, it's melted cheese. I mean, melted cheese on dirt. Once again, cheese, dirt, good. Chocolate, dirt, good. I mean, it just masks everything. Once again, I've had a great time filling in for John Gonzano. Is he back Monday? Do we know?
Yeah, he'll be back Monday.
You said it with a little hint of like,
I mean, I sure hope so. Yeah. I mean, we'll be here, so.
And of course, the Ducks win. Who knows where John's going to end up? I really appreciate it. I want to thank John for letting me sit in this seat. He doesn't take, you know, these kind of responsibilities lightly. He told me, hey, I trust you, and then called in. So that's how much he trusted me. I had a great time. Have a great weekend, everybody. Like every Friday, the show has to end with the wake of the week, a little bit of of the best wrapped up in a wonderful little package with a bow on it. Hey, everybody, I'm Craig Birnbach filling in for John Canzano. You've been listening to the BFT on 750 and 102.9, The Game.
Get him on the show.
Gary Anderson with us, Oregon State football coach. The blind auditions for The Voice are always entertaining because you get people to surprise you. And now, as you say, they go into the battle rounds. What got you into The Voice?
I just think it's competitive. It's spur of the moment. You have to react in a situation that I look at and I deem as being extremely difficult to be. Most of them are amateurs and walking into that situation on that stage and having to perform. That's would be hectic, tough, everything that goes in between. Then you get into these battle rounds and it's amazing to see how far they've come when they take the coaching. They get coached by some of the best, obviously, in the music world. And they come out in these battle rounds and compete. And then it's just sheer entertainment. You know, it's fun. I like watching that show. Some people probably think I'm crazy. Last night I was texting back and forth because I think, you know, I play around with the kids on the phone on the team a little bit and on The Voice. So I think I got a few of them watching it now. They probably won't admit it, but they are.
Get him on the show.
Ben Golliver of SportsIllustrated.com, the Open Floor Podcast, joins us now.
Portland, you know, say what you want about them in the playoffs last year against Golden State. There wasn't a big fear factor. You know, they went toe-to-toe. I mean, they did get knocked out pretty quickly, but it wasn't like they were defeated mentally. And when I look at teams like the Thunder or even the Clippers, there's a little bit of that mental defeat going on when they play Golden State. So I think you can have a real conversation now. If you're Golden State, I mean, you almost would rather play the Thunder than the Blazers. And I never thought I'd be saying that, say, 3 or 4 weeks ago. And that's a credit, like I said, first and foremost to Lillard for stepping up, turning it on, and keeping this season on the right track.
Get her on the show.
Sydney Weiss joining us now, Oregon State guard.
A couple years ago, my dad told me about the song Indestructible by Disturbed, which is like a hardcore rock band, a heavy metal band, whatever you want to call it. And so that I listened to that song right before going up onto the floor, and it gets me into that mindset of, competitive energy and, kicking butt, taking names out on the court, whatever I have to do to get to that point.
Get him on the show.
Kelly Graves is the coach at the University of Oregon, third season with the women's basketball program. What do coaches do to get ready for games? You listen to music? What do you do?
I mean, I'm almost embarrassed to give you my playlist, but I actually have a game day playlist, and to kind of date myself here, I have a lot of disco in it, buddy. I've got a lot of Donna Summer and some others.
Get him on the show.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports. He's here to help us break it all down.
I like UCLA. I picked them all the way to the championship game. But here's the thing about UCLA. They will go as far as their defense takes them from this point on. They didn't need it for the first weekend, but now they're going to have to start playing defense, and they're capable of it. We've seen it, like at that game in Arizona, for example. You know, UCLA is capable of playing defense. They just don't always show an interest in it, and sometimes the execution's not there. But if they play defense, they can win the national championship.
Get him on the show.
Lamar Hurd, Blazers broadcaster.
3 nights ago, I'm hanging out in my living room watching TV. I get a text message. It's from Kevin. He's updating me on the rap beef that is taking place right now between Remy Ma out of New York and Nicki Minaj. So Kevin is texting me to update. He's letting me know what his opinion is of it. He thinks they need to leave Nicki Minaj alone. And he's going off. There's this whole text thread. And the whole time I'm just laughing at him. I don't even have anything to offer.
Get him on the show.
He is a Blazer fanatic and an actor on the rise in two huge shows, Billions and The Americans. I had my chance. There was no way I was doing the show without you coming on just so I could say, I know Kelly O'Coin. How cool is it for you to have CJ McCollum tweeting you and like basically promoting you?
I would love to play cool, but I can't because you'd call me out.
Yes.
No, of course, it's the coolest thing in the world. And I also have a thing that I think a lot of adult men probably have. I still think of myself as younger,
sure,
than the guys I'm watching on the court. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not. I mean, not intellectually. Just that's how it feels. So CJ absolutely feels like my peer age-wise, and it's like, oh, cool.
you know, he's a borderline all-star, and he's tweeting about my show. That's so fantastic.
Get him on the show.
Right across from me are Randy and Jason Sklar.
If Portland got a baseball team, it would probably be like an old-timey baseball team where the gloves are the size of your hand, and everybody's got a current handlebar mustache. And
they already do.
You don't know where, exactly, you don't know where the field is. It's just a pop-up thing. It just pops up anywhere. It's like, where are we playing today? I don't know. Check their Instagram.
Right. That's the only way you find it.
Check their Instagram. That's it. They'll find out. And there's like a farmer's market at second base. Yeah, literally. Like, have you tried our heirloom tomatoes? We just harvested them from left center.
Get him on the show.
John Canzano, a guest on his own show.
I keep trying to build a case for Oregon winning this game. And I'll say things like, you know, what if Kansas's guards got in foul trouble? Or what if Landon Lucas, rolls an ankle and he's not in there? Can Jordan Bell, you know, control the paint? But it starts falling apart because I just can't see Oregon scoring enough points to win this game. I still think Kansas is going to score, in the high 80s, maybe 90 points against the Ducks. And I don't know that Oregon can keep pace. How about if Tyler Dorsey shoots 8 for 9, if Dylan Brooks goes nuts and plays the way he can play? And then on top of that, I think they're going to need a special performance from somebody we don't expect, like Peyton Pritchard, you know, comes out and scores 15 and has 9 assists or something like that. Then maybe they're in this game. But people are saying, what shot do you give them? And I go, there's a good chance they get beat by 20 tomorrow night.